resides in Pismo Beach, but we won't hold that against him. Great Rotarian, great man. Paul, please lead us in the invocation.
Will you bow your hearts in prayer, please? Our Heavenly Father, David J. Brewer, Justice of the United States Supreme Court, wrote an opinion following the decision of the highest court in our land in the early months of 1892. He wrote, "Our declarations affirm and reaffirm that this is a religious nation, and they speak the voice of the entire people. The common practices of the opening of our governing bodies with prayer makes known that our faith is essential to our makeup as a nation, and any attempt to deny this fact denies the very heart and soul of America. And so it is in this spirit that we pray this invocation tonight. We're grateful for the open council meeting and our council chambers at our city hall. Our mayor and each city council member have been freely elected by our citizens to be channels through which you can give direction and guidance for the betterment of our city and each citizen. Cause your blessings to especially be upon all who serve us and work at City Hall. Cause each of them to sense the strength and the security of your invisible presence. We invite you to be the unseen guest at our council meeting tonight."
Okay, we're going to have Kepley Whitmorris, who's an 11th grade student, at sixth grade student at the Cobra Beach Elementary. And Kepley is caring. He's an intelligent student. He is a true leader. He welcomes new students to the school, and he helps. He helps students with their homework, and he enjoys sports. Kepley, if you'd like to lead us with a flag salute.
"Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all."
Thank you. Kepley, if you'll stay there for just a second, I have a little memorial.
Nice shirt color, by the way.
You called him
into the corner. Hey, what are you talking about?
Flag salute is always so fun. We meet so many nice little students that are from Grover Beach and Grover Heights. Okay, next we'll do our roll call, please.
Here.
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 Here. We have a closed session announcement on September 15, 2003, after meeting in closed session regarding conference with legal counsel on pending litigation regarding Jensen versus the City of Grover Beach. The council reconvened into public session. No reportable action was taken in closed session, and the city council meeting was adjourned. Now we'll move into our ceremonial calendar. First thing we have on the agenda is a introduction of a new maintenance worker, and Mike Ford, I think, will come forward. John Barkley, I'm sorry. We'll introduce our new public works employee. I don't see, are they both here? Neither one's here.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, Brian Blashaw, come on up.
Did I say your last name right? Blashaw?
Blashaw.
Welcome aboard.
Thank you.
Just introduce yourself to everybody.
I'm Brian Blashaw. Pleased to meet you.
Brian, nice to meet you.
Pleased to meet you too.
Hey, Brian, I'm Steve.
Hey, Steve.
You're back. Welcome.
Hey. Thank you.
Want to say a few words, or?
Just grateful to be here and grateful to be a part of this city.
Thank you. Welcome aboard. Now the city manager, Ron Anderson, will introduce our new public works, community development director. Ron, did you want to?
Honorable Mayor, members of the city council, we're pleased to announce that after
a search that's lasted basically since the 1st of January. We have been able to bring on somebody just today, Jake Raper from
Opportunity to come to Grover Beach. I really like the team that you have here. I see a lot of good opportunities and good challenges, and they held a little reception for me today, and I met most of the staff, and it was really a pleasure meeting some dedicated employees that you have. And again, thank you for the opportunity for being here.
Thank you, Jake.
Thanks.
Well, there's Kathy. Hi, Kathy. Kathy Petker is going to, who's our Parks and Recreation Manager, will announce an invitation to the YMCA Lights On program. Lights After School, I'm sorry. My lights aren't on. That's okay.
Mayor, City Council, members of the audience. I'm here to represent the YMCA and also Grover Beach Parks and Recreation to let you know about the open house, and it's on Thursday, October 9th, and it will be at the YMCA office in Pismo Beach, and there are flyers being distributed, and you will get copies in your packets, and if anyone from the audience would like one, they're over on the counter. And this is an opportunity for everyone in the community to come and meet the partners that make after-school programs work. And Grover Beach is a big partner with the YMCA with our skate park operations and other teen dances and other events that we work with them throughout the year, and we're very glad to be a partner with the Y. And the YMCA also has many other partnering options that are out there for after-school kids. And if you get a chance to come by and stop by the YMCA, come and look at everything that is out there for after-school programs. Thank
what,
you.
What time was that, Kathy?
2:30 to 5:30. And that is Thursday, October 9th. And if anyone has any questions in the audience, they can call Grover Beach Recreation or the YMCA, and we'd be happy to help you.
Good job. The next thing I'd like to announce is, I don't know if anyone in the audience has had a chance to tour the Grover Beach Elementary School, but we have now full sidewalk all around the school, which is something this council has been working for about 2 or 3 years. It's a great improvement. The apron or the asphalt needs to be tied in, and then that street, all the streets will be, improvements will be finished there. It's wonderful. I saw it Sunday, and I'm just, it's really neat. We have a lot of letters. There's probably 30 or 40 letters here from Grover Beach Elementary School children. These letters will be displayed in our hallway, and we want to thank them for writing letters, and we're as excited as they are that they have that sidewalk, because that is a real safety issue as far as I'm concerned. I'm glad they have a sidewalk to walk down, don't have to get in the mud, don't have to walk in the water, and they're safe, don't have to go out in the street to catch a ride, so that's great. Now we'll move into public communications. Any member of the public may address the council for a period not to exceed 3 minutes on any item of interest within the jurisdiction of the council. The council will listen to all communication. However, in compliance with the Brown Act, the council cannot act on items not on the agenda. So anyone that'd like to speak at this time? Robert, how did I know?
Thank you. As you guys know, I was here 3 weeks ago for Robert Hayes, 281 South 9th Street. As you guys know, 3 weeks ago, I was here to tell you about some problems that I had with the South County People's Kitchen Spontaneous Church. Since September 16, 2003, I've documented 40 complaints directly or indirectly related to the South County People's Kitchen, sponsored by the Central Coast Baptist Church, and the transients they bring into the neighborhood on a daily basis. 7 of these complaints have been reported to the Grover Beach Police Department. Since September 16, 2003, I have taken 76 photographs documenting these complaints. Today at 10:45, on the South County Central Coast Baptist Church property along Rockaway Street, I found can number 40, and this one was unopened. So I guess the police chief was doing his job, and they threw it in the bushes before they can get caught with it. But every day, 40 cans and bottles in the last 3 weeks, all within 100 feet of the People's Soup Kitchen. It's having a drastic effect on our neighborhood, both the residences and the businesses. I don't expect the council to do anything about it overnight. I just wanted you guys to be aware of the problem, and I know that you guys are going to eventually be doing something with the Planning Commission on that. But as you can see, it's clearly an ongoing problem, and I just appreciate it if the city can take some consideration on that. Thank you, gentlemen and ladies.
Thank you, Robert.
Thank you.
Thanks for your interest. We appreciate it. At this point, if there are no other speakers, yeah.
Mr. Mayor, City Council, my name is Chuck Ashen. I live at 458 Seabright. I just like to correct something for the public record there. We had our meeting back on September 15th. The City Council / Town Hall, I know in the past when the minutes come up, there's several of you who like to correct it for the for posterity or whatever. On that particular evening there, towards the wee hours, it was past my bedtime, so I was no longer around there, but I did stay there for a good deal of it. Acting Lieutenant Brian Thomas came forward and made several statements regarding some citizens that were there that night, and he attributed one statement to me that was untrue. He said that I stated the majority of the department's officers live outside of Grover Beach. Well, I have a copy of the tape, and he's free to come into town. I know he doesn't live in Grover Beach, but and review the tape. But at no time during that tape did I say anything about where the city, the police officers live in this city, and that, and it wouldn't even. I was talking, I think, about information in regards to getting what we had on our sheriff's department and so forth, and when it's going to come about there. But I never made that statement. So, for the record, it's an untrue statement, and hope in the future the gentleman gets his facts a little straight there. However, since he did open up can of worms there. Quite often, the residence of our officers is used as trying to fortify the fact that the police department's more personal. Well, for the fact, I think between 4 and 5 officers from our department actually live in our city limits, and one of them's currently about to move. And they're pretty well scattered all over, not so much in South County. The majority of them are from Napomo, Mesa, and the city of Napomo, or future city of Napomo, I guess. And further south, the majority of our officers actually live in the Orcutt, Santa Maria area there, for what it's worth. I don't know why. I think our city every year from the UCSB economic report gets good ratings as far as one of the more affordable areas to live in our county. Why the people, our employees don't choose to live here, I have no idea.
Deal with that. I don't know what the cost factor was for him, but I know that's one of the things he mentioned. And since you talked about the town hall meeting, I want to say that I have had several comments that were just outstandingly favorable about our town hall meeting. Everybody liked it and even mentioned that we might do it once or twice a year, and I think that might be something we try maybe in 6 months and see what kind of a response we have. And if it looks like it's very favorable, maybe we do it every 6 months, or if it's not that favorable, maybe we do it once a year. But I thought it was outstanding.
Thank you, David.
Good idea, Dave.
Yes.
I'm getting a lot of mileage out of something we all
agree
to.
Yeah, you are. Yeah.
You know? Well, you know,
of course. That was all of us.
Back on point, Donna, the minutes will reflect Mr. Ashton's clarification for the minutes for town hall. I'm just asking him. Well, I'm just saying tonight's meeting, mm-hmm. since he's gotten up and spoken to that.
Even Bill Rabdahl from Pismo Beach, who had showed up at our town hall meeting, was very astounded that we would have the courage to do that, and he commended us for it. So just patting ourselves on the back one more time. Anyway, if there's no one else that wants to speak at public comment, we'll move into our consent agenda. We have items 3, 4, 5, and 6. Does anyone want to pull any of those items for separate consideration or discussion?
Number 6, please.
Number 6, Dave. Anybody else?
Seeing no other, I'll make a motion that we accept 3, 4, 5.
A second.
I have a motion and a second. Can we have a roll call vote, please?
Yes.
Councilmember Shaw?
Yes.
Councilmember Eckhart?
Yes.
Councilmember Lieberman?
Yes.
Mayor Arnson?
Yes. Motion passes unanimously. Item number 6, Dave.
Okay. Item number 6 is a discussion over the local agency formation commission change in our cost distribution formula. And my question was to our city manager, what if any service could LAFCO provide for us, to us?
LAFCO recently went through an exercise where they did the sphere of influence study and the municipal service review Those are both required to be done on a periodic basis by state law, by LAFCO, so that exists. If the city were going to be involved in a district, for example, if there was a fire service district that either was within the city limits or outside of the city limits, then LAFCO would be involved in something like that. Okay. You know, those kinds of services. Okay.
That's fine. I didn't think of those, and I couldn't see any purpose for anything that the LAFCO could do for us. Our sphere of influence is defined by others. So, but anyway, I would like to make a motion that we accept item six with that.
Well, before.
Okay, I'm sorry.
Well, do you want to get a second before we discuss?
What is it? I'll second. Dave.
Okay.
I just wanted to say, Dave, I when I read that, I kind of had some of the same thoughts, but I wasn't going to bring it up because understanding what LAFCO does.
The LAFCO distribution of fees, and I think that was a real similar feeling to what has been projected here in this item, and so I think it's hopefully more of a lucrative way to do things or evenly based. I would hope so. Anyway, I think it looks okay to me to have a motion, a second. Can we have a roll call vote, please? If
yes.
Councilmember Lieberman?
Yes.
Councilmember Scholes?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Santos?
Yes.
Mayor Arnolson?
Yes. I know we closed the public comment, but I see that Peg Bernard has came in, and normally she, you have anything to say, or are you just visiting us?
Just visiting.
Okay, well. I didn't know. I missed you until just now, and Steve, Mr. Lieberman told me you were here, so I thought if you had something that was an update on something happening at the county level that would benefit our wonderful community, we'd let you update us. So thank you for being here. Public hearing items, number 7, National Pollution Discharge Elimination System, Phase 2 Permit Program. Murray Wilson will give us our staff report.
Thank you, Mayor and Council. If you remember, a couple months ago, I visited you with this same item, and I'm going to not go into the depth that I did at the last meeting since you guys already have a background on the project. I'm going to give you a quick background review and then go into the changes that were made in the program since the last time you've seen it. So once again, this program comes from the Clean Water Act. Amendments were made in 1972. Which provided that discharges of pollutants into any waters of the United States had to be permitted by the general permit and the NPDES system, or the National Pollutant Discharge Elimination System. In 1987, amendments were made to allow the Clean Water Act to regulate these discharges through the NPDES program. In 1999, the EPA issued orders that cities and counties must comply with this rule. And along with that, they must submit a notice of intent and a stormwater management plan to the regional board. This permit will be taking place. It's a 5-year permit. The stormwater plan covers the first 5 years of the program. The intentions of this program is to reduce the pollutants in the stormwater by the best means possible at the city's level. As I mentioned, the city must develop, implement, and enforce a stormwater management plan. The intent of this order is to improve water quality. The date that we have to submit this deadline, or that we have to submit this plan, is October 27th. So that's why we're back here this month to go over these issues. The regional board will hold a formal comment period on the plan once we have submitted the plan and a digital copy. The plan will be put online, and people can address and comment on our plan on the regional board's website. A public comment period was not required for this plan, but we had done that previously. That was what the under target date for activities.
What page is it, Marie? Sorry to interrupt.
That's page 7.
Okay.
if you recall in the draft plan, year one had implementation of these public outreach programs, such as the storm stenciling, the stormwater stenciling intakes, and other programs in all other sections. We've basically taken the first 2 years, depending upon the program section, and we have rolled back the implementation of these items to year two or three or four to allow the city time to basically prepare for the program and get their feet on the ground instead of just having to jump straight into it. As I mentioned, this plan is a five-year program. It covers the first 5 years. And these activities, which we had called out in the first year of the program, were not necessary. So we're going to take it a little slower than we had initially gone about it. So to wrap this up, we need to submit a notice of intent with a fee of $3,000 and the stormwater management plan to the regional board. The fee is based on a population calculation, and the city of Grover Beach falls into the population category of 10,000 to 24,999. The following alternatives are provided for your consideration tonight. You can approve the stormwater management plan as presented in attachment one, direct that specific modifications be made to the plan prior to adoption, or provide other direction to staff. We recommend that City Council review and approve the city's National Pollutant Discharge Elimination System stormwater management plan and authorize the city manager to sign the notice of intent prior to the October 27th meeting or deadline. Thank you.
Questions?
Can we start? I had something. Is this a worthwhile venture?
I believe so.
Why is it that we're waiting 5 years to implement it?
Well, we're not necessarily waiting 5 years to implement them. We have steps of times that we plan to implement certain items. And considering the level of staff right now, I figured that, and it was the department's idea, that going into this full-fledged in the first year is a little bit overboard. We also meet with other cities and the county in a stormwater group. And the other cities and county have not attacked it so right by the head. And they have also used this first year or two as a research and kind of development time. So I'm following the guidance of other cities in our county and going with the same ideas that they have.
Well, I understand spending a year to take care of, but I see your fifth year is when you're going to determine how to fund this program. Why, you've lost 4 or 5 years of funding besides the delay in something that you say is a worthwhile venture for our community.
Well, the reason for...
Like we're putting it off for no reason other than we don't have to do it yet. Study it for 2 or 3 years, and then we'll put something together, and then we'll look at the funding in the fifth year. And
well, we do have funding already approved through the 2004 budget.
I was talking about some kind of recovery funding from sources, whether it's the community or the businesses or the property tax or somewhere.
There's numerous legal battles going on at this time as far as funding sources go to make a stormwater tax or that sort of thing, and those haven't been resolved completely in the courts. And the general consensus is that these will be defined in the courts in the next few years, and to try and spearhead these on our own, I think, is a big task for us. And to wait to see what other jurisdictions use as methods of funding, I think, is the most appropriate source or the most appropriate way to handle this.
Well, we've all been talking about downtown. We've talked about a storm drainage right in our Grand Avenue. We know the costs that are involved in that. And we know that we're going to have to do it 5 years from now. Why wouldn't we be looking at trying to generate some funding ahead of the five-year deadline? I don't understand why. Well, I understand what you're saying. You want somebody else to be the guinea pig and work out of the kinks, but
I do want to remind you that what is outlined in this plan is the minimum what we must achieve. The regional board will hold us to these requirements that we've set for ourselves.
I understand it.
So if we say that we're going to have a funding source developed in the first year, we better do it or they're going to come down on us and say, if you haven't done this, then it needs to be done or okay. There's going to be some consequences.
I understand that would be pretty tough. But I also see that you're saying let's do the funding source in the fifth year. And
maybe the city manager could jump in here on reimbursement. And
I think there's a couple of issues. What Murray's trying to communicate is that the plan is designed to have some elements that we would achieve over the five-year period. The one that is perhaps the most complicated is figuring out how to come up with a legally defensible approach for cost recovery. In this year's budget, the council has appropriated funds, and the Administrative Services Department is about to issue requests for proposals for user fee study for water, wastewater, and stormwater. So part of that process is for certified smart folks to give us a recommendation about how we might proceed with that. That could happen during this fiscal year, or it could be in place for next fiscal year. But at the same time, as Murray indicates, there are court cases that have found approaches to be illegal, and those have not been totally through the process of appeals and so on. And so the definition or how that is defined is still kind of up in the air. Don't find us in violation of the plan because we haven't done it in the first year.
Yes, sir. John?
Murray, what's the consequence of us not adopting this, or do we even have that option? I think your previous staff report addressed that issue. Could you maybe refresh our memory on that?
Yeah, this is a federal mandate, and there are severe penalties for not following their adoption deadlines. We have one of the later deadlines of all the cities for a couple of reasons that we don't need to go into, but to get back to your question, there are serious penalties associated with not adopting the plan on time. I can't give you a dollar figure of what they are, but I recall some figure around a maximum penalty of approximately $27,000 a day of not being in compliance with the plan.
Let me kind of say something that, and so this is similar to, let's say you have a 30-year house loan and you have to make a payment every month. If you don't make the payment, you're in trouble, but if you pay it off in 10 years, which is basically, I guess, what you're saying, if we come up with a way to finance it in 2 years and start that and it's legally defensible, we're not in violation. However, if we wait, then we are. So that's kind of how I see it. Is that similar to what you're saying?
Yeah, I think that's good. Analogy.
Okay. Any other questions? Or?
I'd also like to point out, if I could, if you could turn to Appendix B of the Stormwater Management Plan. There, since the last time you saw the budget, it's been massaged a little bit and filled out completely. We've broke it down into ongoing expenses and one-time expenses. A lot of the one-time expenses are some of the major expenses that the program is going to occur over the first 5 years of the project. As number three states, preparing a storm sewer system map from the city engineer. Money figures have already been allocated in the 2004 budget. So I think the future years may be a little less of a pinch, I guess.
Thank you. Any other questions?
Oh, that brings up a point. On your staff report, you're talking about this year's operating budget of $83,000 is set aside for this. And back here, you just are showing me an 04 grand total of $53,000.
Correct.
So the budget amount was just a guess that we wanted to make sure we allocated enough money for it. Is that?
I'm not sure exactly how the budget came about. That was prior to my involvement in the program, so maybe the city manager could address that for you.
Is this reimbursable, this $53,000 that we're going to spend in 04?
No, this is a non-compensated federal mandate.
I guess what I meant was, is this?
Liz Dukas, 555 Seabright. Does this include things like, for example, Ken's towing, washing their oil debris right into the storm drains? Or is that the type of things this is supposed to prohibit?
Yeah, that is basically would be considered a best management practice. The city will be developing pamphlets and informational brochures for businesses, for homeowners, and for different people so they know that their practices, like you just explained, are in violation of the stormwater program. And that's part of the program is to, the major part of the program is to inform the public of these things, just because I think a major issue is the public not knowing that they're doing these things.
And say they were to continue the practice, how is that handled? Are they required to have oil-water separators? Are they prohibited from doing that at all? How would it be handled?
There's various levels that the city could require a project to implement. It could be small, just barriers that keep the actual location where the washing down is occurring to drain all into one area and be kept on site. I can imagine if once the ordinance, the illicit discharge ordinance, is developed, then there's going to be means to cite people that are discharging these pollutants into the storm sewer system.
Okay, thank you.
Any other public comments or questions? Seeing none, we'll bring it back to the council.
I just had one thing. Murray in here lists the chlorinated swimming pools, but doesn't say anything about hot tubs. Is that under the same thing?
I think we could probably consider that under the same thing, yes. Under the illicit discharge section?
Mm-hmm.
I took that straight from the general permit, so I would assume, I could check up on that with the regional board, but I would assume that those would be considered one and the same.
Because I think for our city, we have more hot tubs than we do swimming pools and so forth. And then it's too bad that we couldn't have more than just two cleanup weeks instead of, you know, the spring and fall to help our city.
That's what's currently, I think, in place. Those sorts of things are able to be worked into the program if after year one we feel that additional cleanup day or additional two cleanup days would provide what we are looking for, basically a better water quality, then we could implement that into the program and have more days like that. So the program basically is laying out the minimums, and the city should take these things into consideration. And we do have to submit an annual report to the regional board, and they will also provide us with comments if they don't feel that we are doing our end of the deal, then they could require us to do more. So they may actually ask us in the future to provide additional cleanup days or whatever the situation may be.
Okay. I guess I had one dumb question. I noticed on here that we're paying for painting and stencils, and I think we've gone to a trend of using water-based paint. Is that
an option to use one of those methods? But I don't think it's written in that you cannot use them. I think it's just considered to be a good practice to use something when it's that close to a storm sewer inlet that you could potentially drip some of that paint in there, and that's what we're trying to keep from happening.
Okay.
Yeah, I just wanted to commend Murray on doing a really good job. and bringing this program forward to us. I think staff did an outstanding job in making this available to the public for 45 days. I know that it was not a state mandate. It was an idea that they brought up. Unfortunately, nobody in the public commented, but nonetheless, the opportunity was provided. And I think it's important that we establish a program for a comprehensive approach to stormwater runoff, and I think this will get us started in the right direction. It's important that we deal with stormwater runoff for existing businesses, as Ms. Duke has pointed out. And I think, Dave, you touched on this earlier. It's important for our downtown and getting that system in place, and it'll obviously afford us an opportunity to get some cost recovery on these items. And with that, I'd like to make a motion that we approve the city's National Pollutant Discharge Elimination System Stormwater Management Plan. Ooh, take a breath. And authorize the city manager to sign the notice of intent prior to October 27, 2003.
Second.
I have a motion and second. Can we have a roll call vote, please?
Yes.
Yes.
Councilmember Ekholm.
Yes.
Councilmember Lieberman?
Yes.
Mayor Arnson?
Yes.
Thank you, Marie.
Good job. I'd also like to
take a quick moment to bid my farewells to the council. I'm going to be moving on to another position, so this is the last time you will see me in this forum. And
thank you.
Good job, Murray.
I'm Murray. Was the report that bad?
Thanks, Murray.
I thought he was going to thank the academy and his parents.
Our next item is item number eight. It's the appointment to the Parks and Rec Commission, and our recreation manager, Kathy Petker, will be giving a short staff report.
Mayor and City Council members, Kathy Petker, recreation manager. The Parks and Recreation Commission has had a vacancy since May of this year, and staff advertised the position. We received four applications, and the advisory body screening committee held interviews on Monday, September 29th, with three of the applicants. One applicant withdrew her application before the interviews. And before you this evening are three alternatives to, one, accept the screening committee's recommendation and adopt the resolution appointing Jan Johnson to fill an unexpired four-year term expiring on January 31st, 2006, and to introduce Commissioner Johnson to the City Council. Alternative number two is modify the screening committee's recommendation and adopt the resolution as modified. Do not accept this.
It would be appropriate to vote on the resolution.
I'm sorry, we have to.
This is not my night, Jan. You know, I just figured if I'm in favor of it, everybody else has to be so. Can I have a motion and kind of a motion to accept Jan as our next Parks and Rec Commissioner?
I'd like to make that motion to accept the advisory board screening committee's recommendations and vote to appoint Jan Johnson to fill the term.
A second.
Roll call, please.
Yes.
Yes.
Councilmember Ekblad?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Santos?
Yes.
Mayor Arnson?
Yes. Now, Jan, how would you like to come on up?
Yes. Welcome. Would you like to say some words?
Something? Would you like to?
I would just like to briefly say thank you to the City Council and to the Parks Commission, to the Parks and Rec Department for having the trust and the confidence in me that I will do a good job for the city, and I will certainly do my darnest. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Jan. There were some other wonderful applicants. It's amazing how good some of the people that we have that asked to serve on our committees are. And I know Jan's a great hamburger flipper, too, so if we ever, ever, what do you mean used to be? If we ever need him to come in, yes, we can get him to do it recreationally. So,
Yeah, I want to just chime in. I wanted to welcome Jan again, and I think this is something that we've been talking about in this community. You know, it takes a community to make a difference. It takes people willing to step forward and give their time and energy. And Jan, I'd like to say welcome aboard. And anyone out there who's watching, when we have other positions come forward, please don't be shy. We would certainly appreciate your volunteerism. Thank you.
I just want to say we had two other applicants that were very well qualified and very good. But it seems like, Jan, you just flipped over a little bit more, I guess. I don't know. But you did a great job, and we're looking forward to working with you.
Ditto. Okay. Thanks again. We're moving to item number 9, fire engine purchase. Our staff report will be given by Chief Jack Criswell. Good evening, Chief.
Good evening. Mayor, council members, brought Captain Servia along.
He's the one that actually worked on the bid specifications and did the majority of the work on this project. This year's budget, the 04 budget, you approved the purchase of a new fire engine and equipment to the tune of $345,000 for the engine, $95,000 for the equipment. We prepared and distributed to 8 fire engine manufacturing companies specifications with a bid closing date of August 26th. August 26th, the city clerk opened the 4 bids received. None of the vendors providing bids met all of the prepared specifications, and all bids were over the amount budgeted for this purchase.
Ask staff to amend and redistribute the bid specifications. You're not talking about the dollar amount that's been budgeted for this engine, are you, or could you maybe?
No, that's correct. We want to redo the specifications to make sure that this time when we go out to bid that we will fall within the amount that you budgeted.
Okay, so we're not going for the primo, just the primo engine.
Just the primo engine. We're going for one that...
Excuse me for lack of a better term, yeah.
we're going for one that should last us 20 years.
Okay, great.
Dave?
Okay, I'm... At the fire safety meetings we've had with Oceana, we've talked about our shortage of engine. We could be in trouble here because we don't have enough of a backup, reliable backup. How long is this going to back us up to do this to save us $11,000? We budgeted $440,000, and their low bid for LaFrance, if I'm reading it right, is $451,000. So for $11,000, which sounds like an awful lot of money for a fire engine, I have to admit, but it seems like we're awfully close to the budgeted amount. 345 plus 95 in equipment is 440,000. Their low bid, if it includes everything you're talking about, is 451.5. So for $11,500, we're going to start all over again and perhaps just eliminate something. And is there a way to accept their bid and then say, well, never mind the the generator or something? I just am surprised that we're as close as we are, considering the amount of dollars. $10,000 on $450,000 isn't a lot.
Right. I probably would go along with what you're saying if the low bid actually met the specifications,
yeah.
But they don't.
Okay.
And that's the problem.
I'm just looking at the
right.
Bid opening results, and it lists each item there. So it lists equipment, a certain amount, taxing, license, cost, engine. So they have deleted some things, or they haven't met all your...
Right.
Okay. That's enough.
We won't be putting this off. We're actually... Because of the time since the last council meeting, we've had time to rework some of the specifications, and we're ready to send these packets back out again.
But
yeah, I was going to say attachment 3, Dave, shows that American LaFrance, there was, looks like 10 or 11 items in which they didn't meet the specs.
I appreciate your thought. I mean, we would be more than happy to do that, but
Okay.
You wouldn't be right.
Okay. Hey, I'm just trying Stephen. To help out wherever I can.
Well, you know, I just wanted to tease Dave and say if the fire engine didn't have a generator, it might not be able to charge your pager battery.
Yeah.
I spoke to Chief Criswell this afternoon and just had a discussion about these very issues. And being that these bids didn't cover the minimum specs, as stated, the department's going to go rework them. And I'm confident that they'll get faster turnaround based on the information the chief shared with me.
I have a silly question. Tax and licensing, will that go up after tomorrow?
Only in California.
We don't pay for a license.
To bring the cost into the into what we had budgeted. Are there things that you're really not going to need, or how have you guys reworked that?
Okay, I'll let Captain Serby.
primary concern when we looked at the bids was that regardless, first of all, that the prices were obviously over the budget amount, but that upon further review, every manufacturer that submitted a bid had not met what we consider automatic fail points on the bid. And they're considered critical points that the city wants to guarantee to protect itself to make sure it gets a quality piece of equipment that's going to last 20 years. Answer your question, the items that we're concerned about is we were trying, as part of it, because the vehicle is intended service is approximately up to 20 years, we were trying to plan ahead into the future and regarding some things, and some things that could be purchased at a later date in the future could be added with minimal disturbance and degradation of quality of the apparatus, where that's what we intend to remove. We've put in provisions like power supplies and stuff like that. It's more of a technology type of advanced kind of technology is kind of pushing us to start modernizing technology-wise. Mm-hmm. So we've put in some caveats in the new changes to allow us to adopt those changes at a later date without having any serious our concern is electrical system malfunctions or anything like that planned for the future for that. So by removing some of those technological advances, we can bring down our prices to meet that budget amount. If you'd like any further clarification, I'm happy to give it to you.
No, that's fine. I guess the other question is, in my mind, it seems like most engines at this time in space would be fairly similar. And maybe I'm wrong. Maybe it depends on your geographic location or the makeup of your city streets or whatever, but it just would seem that, like with CDF, maybe, because we do this with police vehicles.
Right.
So I'm thinking, why can't we tag along with CDF and say, hey, as long as you're ordering 10 fire trucks next year, can we put in an order that pretty much matches your specifications? Are our specifications that much different?
They are and they aren't. I mean, the quintessentials, it's got a pump, it's got ladders, it's got hose, and it's got water, and it has an engine to take it from to and from. That stays mm-hmm. the same. The difference is CDF writes their bids on average for the cheapest buck they can buy, and they have a staff to support that. Most CDF county rigs, if you notice, Pismo Beach did not buy the typical county mold because they didn't want to have the maintenance costs that are associated with it. Most CDF rigs, on average, spend almost 2 months of the year in the shop for repair because they buy such cheap quality. The concern that was presented, and I remember Councilmember Lieberman asking me about it, was that we wanted to make sure. In the past, we've had a kind of a couple doozies in the firehouse, and we wanted to make sure that the city was not paying for something with that kind of money and going, you know, hey, this thing spends all the time out of service. So what we've tried to do is we've kind of just taken a little, not trying to ask for areas. Our streets tend to have a lot of ups and downs, and because particularly like Grand, where you come down Oak Park and come back up, we have more of an issue, so we don't hit the front of the engine or the back end of the engine hitting. It's considerations like that that are the things that we focus on.
Okay. Yeah, well, I would think that probably CDF rotates their engines probably on a more regular basis than we do, too. Probably 10 years would probably be
right.
probably 7 to 10, but I think they would probably rotate them. I don't know.
Their service life tends to be a little shorter than ours, and they abuse them a lot more frequently than we do. So.
Okay. Thank you. Any other questions?
Can I just jump in one more time? Yeah, going through the detail that's provided in the staff report on the manufacturer's specification dismissals, there's at least one item on every single one of these that I would call critical to that engine. I mean, for one manufacturer not to provide seats that don't hold a breathing apparatus in it, that's a firefighter safety issue to me. And that's also delaying a response to our community. To not have an engineer see a visible sight gauge on the water tank is a huge issue to me because you can't count on electronics. I mean, I understand just paging through this without really analyzing it that this doesn't look right, and I support the staff report.
I had one more question, I guess. I'm not a firefighter, but I recognize the name of American LaFrance. They've been around for a long time. Is that a preferable engine that we – well, Pierce, too. Yeah, you're right. Are those two that we would kind of shoot for if we had a chance, if we had comparable bids, does it make any difference?
They're both reputable manufacturers. They have a long-standing history, actually two of the longest-standing manufacturers in the United States. They stand behind the work. Ventura County just purchased a fleet of them, and they said they came out. They had one problem with a particular U-joint somewhere back east, and they came into their entire fleet and replaced it free of charge, and they never had any problems with the part. And they only had one incident. That's the kind of service you expect when you pay for quality equipment. Mm-hmm. And that's something that, you know, we don't want a fly-by-night shop. We don't want somebody that's going to buy it and they go out of business the next day. That's
kind of what my question was based on, yes.
Sounds eerily familiar.
Okay. Anybody else have any questions? Or anybody in the public that would like to ask a question or has any discussion on this issue? Come on up, Robert.
Thank you, Mayor. I used to be a firefighter for Grover Beach, and I just, as a member of the community, I recognize that the fire department is in a critical need of another fire truck. Mr. Ekbaum brought up something earlier about, hey, what happens if the city faces a disaster? And I was just talking about it the other day. Hypothetical, but if this city faces the big earthquake or this county faces the big earthquake, our two fire trucks are sorely inadequate for the city's needs at a time like that. And even with the mutual aid on a regional disaster like that, we're looking at hours before we would even get mutual aid. So the city definitely needs to add another fire truck to its
I'll make a motion that we reject all the bids as non-responsive and direct staff to amend and redistribute the bid specifications.
I'll second that.
We have a motion and a second. Can we have a voice vote? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
All opposed? Motion passes unanimously. Thank you, gentlemen. Yeah. Thanks. Item number 10, status report on the Community Development Department Blue Ribbon Committee. Our staff report will be given by the interim community development, well, no longer interim community development director, but Susan Salescheck.
Thank you, Mayor and City Council, and it was fun while it lasted. as you may recall, the City Council adopted community goals back in April of this year. And goal number 13 stated that the City Council wanted to enhance building and safety services by reducing building permit plan check times and also enhancing inspection and building code enforcement services and reducing elimination of taxpayer subsidies for these services. Staff began implementing this goal by creation of the Community Development Department Blue Ribbon Committee. And the Blue Ribbon Committee has met several times, and we so far have addressed two topics of goal number 13, and that is identifying how the department can streamline the building permit process and identifying where we could consider adjustments to the fee schedule to reduce subsidies. Just for your information, the committee, the Blue Ribbon Committee, was composed of several of our local developers experienced in our permit process, so they're actually users of our building permit services and are experienced with that. And it was, I was delighted with the ideas they came up with. It was very creative, and we thought of things that hadn't been thought of and then reinstituted things we had done years ago. And in my staff report, it says that some of these items have been implemented. Actually, all of them have at this point. And these include routing. I can give the detail. It's kind of interesting. But we are routing all the permits applications to the different divisions in the Community Development Department simultaneously, which this, you know, we didn't even think of before this committee. Instead of having a linear process, we take kind of a wider shotgun approach. We reinstituted over-the-counter permits for certain types of building permit applications. Building permit rechecks, where a project's been reviewed once and then it goes back to the applicant and is resubmitted, will generally be processed before new applications. And this was brought forward because, particularly for larger projects, more complex developments, folks may have money out on loans holding up property, for instance, much longer than a new application. So in order to get those people moving through the system, we are going to process rechecks sooner. We've reinstituted building permit plan checking of single-family homes and small-scale non-residential projects in-house. And then we selected an outside source to plan check the more complex non-residential projects. And that particular firm that we're outsourcing to has guaranteed turnaround times that are quicker than we ever. That we went out again for a building official position. We changed the salary. And we just had the closing date a week ago. And this time, we do have 7 very qualified applicants. I'm just thrilled. The caliber of these applications are far and above what we had last time. So hopefully, through this process, we'll get a good building official established. I do say that I'm very happy with our contract building official service right now, but we'll have a permanent position filled shortly. As far as the other objectives, we haven't completed the analysis on changing or modifying the fee structure for building and planning applications, so that's kind of our next task. But generally, I just wanted to bring you up to speed that this goal is being worked on and being met, and I receive feedback from the development community all the time that it's working better, they're happier, we're happier, so it's a good thing. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Are we the only city to have this Blue Ribbon Committee?
I don't know that, but it's unique.
I'd just like to be a step ahead of the rest of them. I'm proud of this department. It's very good.
Yeah, we're
nice.
Moving along. I'm very pleased.
John.
Yes, thank you, sir. Susan, nice report. Having some experience in processing building permits throughout this county, I think the changes that are being implemented are going to make a world of difference. I think we will start to see improvements. You had kind of touched on processing times for building permits. Did the committee talk about what would be an acceptable time? I know you said you've got someone who you will outsource and it'll take 10 days, but logistically, what's their expectation? Maybe you can
basically, we're processing building permits within a week to 2 weeks of initial submittal. That they get their feedback, and they're happy with that.
Is that for small projects? Would that, let's say,
for any scope of project?
For any scope, so
unless it's, well, outside of, say, a very large industrial or, you know, complex project.
Okay. Well, that's good to hear. I just have concerns that we become overly optimistic and we don't meet those timelines and what becomes of the backlash. And so I sort of, you know, want to make sure that we're thinking about this. Typically, what you would see is, let's say, 20 days for a first plan check, 10 days for a recheck, and then if the third time they come through, there are very minor items you can issue that over the counter. And that certainly doesn't account for that. Also means that the applicant's architect or engineer will have to perform, because obviously some things are out of staff's control, and we want to make sure that everybody understands that.
Another item we implemented, which wasn't really a streamlining practice, but it was for information, is that when the plan checks occurred and it's sent back to the architect or applicant, that the property owner or applicant, depending on the case, is sent a little notification card so that they're kept in the loop. They know where it's at. Mm-hmm. Nobody can say it's been with the city for a month if it hasn't been with us for a month.
Yeah.
And our planning building technician, her goal is the day that a building permit comes across the counter, we input it in the system and she routes it that day. Whereas before, it may have sat for 2 or 3 weeks before we...
Questions there. Through the budget process, we identify a lot of revenue enhancements that were increases in fees, and your department was suggested that it was going to be the largest, the lion's share of the increases would come from your department, and it was going to be the easiest because we were low on a lot of fees and there was ways we could easily increase them. We have delayed our code enforcement officer in a lot of different things, waiting for these fee increases. I forgot, what did we call them? What was your term for our...
Revenue enhancement.
revenue enhancement.
Okay, revenue enhancement. I thought there was something else. But,
no, revenue enhancement.
We're holding up a number of different things, waiting for these revenue enhancements to come through the Blue Ribbon committees, whether it's Parks and Rec or yours or... Can't we set a deadline or some way of getting on this? Now, this is, well, this is October, and we wanted a code enforcement officer really bad, and we said, we're going to wait until this Blue Ribbon Committee comes back, and we institute the fees so that the money is coming in as we're spending it. Well, that was a very wise choice. We can see that now, but we'd like to know when we can expect your committee to come back with recommendations on fee increases for building.
Okay. I'd expect the Blue Ribbon Committee to wrap up our work within the next month to 2 months. And I know that seems like a long time period, but when we're doing other projects as well, it has been difficult. Right. We've had a unique situation since the beginning of this last year with the change of staff.
It hasn't been
as simple. But we are definitely ready to tackle that issue. We felt as far as what to address first, while we do need the fee enhancements or revenue enhancements, an amount of consternation and concern about building permit process timelines was really at the top.
You're right.
We just,
you're right.
I felt like that had to be dealt with.
Thank you.
Mr. Lieberman.
2 minutes.
I only have 2 minutes?
No, 2 months. I can remember this, too.
You know what? You talked us into it.
Okay. I'll take less than that. No, I agree. This is incredibly great, positive news, and this is exactly what the community's been asking for, and I applaud your efforts. It's very exciting. Dave, you brought up those darn proposed revenue enhancements. As you know, that was my hot button during the budget. And I'm not putting any heat on you more than David already has, but that's something that we're going to run out of time on unless we get going, and I understand exactly where you're going with that. But, again, great news. Thank you.
Dee?
No.
Any comments?
Okay. She's doing a darn good job.
I wanted to throw a couple comments in, and I know that when we talked about this item number 13 as a goal, one of the things I had said is that I'd like to see you turn around building permits in 2 weeks, and you've exceeded that goal. So that was that's made at least you're proposing to exceed that goal, and I think if you have that as a goal, even if you run over, you're going to stay close to that goal if you can. If you say 20 days, then it's going to be, John was saying he thought it was maybe a misnomer to people. I think that started them, but that's the first paragraph. The other three paragraphs have nothing but praise for Susan and her staff. So this is what we want. This is, that goal was to enlighten these, get these people that have a project going and cost them less money by making it move quicker. And in retrospect, they may even want to ante up a little bit more to make it move faster. And that's fine, too. But let's make them happy. Let's make things work in our community. So I applaud you. Thank you, Susan. Any other questions, comments? Anybody in the audience that's from the... Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I'm just curious. Under the old system, how long did it typically take to process a building permit?
Anywhere from 2 to 6 months, depending on the scope of the project.
Wow.
For first time.
Because some of the stories I've heard are a lot longer than that, more closer to the 6 month period.
It depends on how many iterations, but yeah. Simple permit could take as much as 6 months.
Yeah, and the other reason that I brought up the 20 days and not the 10 days is that it is more important that this staff takes time to review that plan check and catch as many items in the first plan check. No one likes the idea of being rushed through in 10 days, and then when you get to the point of close to pulling a permit, you've found something that you've missed. That is not a service. And so while I applaud 10 days, I still question whether that is realistic and if it gives the staff ample time to do the job they are hired and paid to do. And that was the reason why I was talking about 20 rather than the 10 days.
Well, I guess, you know, like I said, if you shoot for 10 and you find out it's unrealistic, then you go to 14 or whatever. But, you know, I mean, because I'm sure they're going to find out whether that's working for them. If they continually are missing things or people are coming back with complaints or something like that, I guess they can adjust that. But at this point, I think the higher your goal is, the better you're going to – the better your service is going to be. So.
Yeah, I would agree with you on that.
Anybody from the building community or anybody in general that would like to speak to this item? It looks like there's no takers. And this was an information item only, so thank you, Susan. Item number 11, proposed resolution establishing fines for violation of parking regulations, selected municipal code, and selected vehicle code sections. Our police chief, John Bradbury, will do the staff report. Good evening, John. How you doing?
Honorable Mayor and members of the City Council, we're here to talk tonight about... fines for violations of parking regulations, and those are selected municipal codes and selected vehicle code sections. A lot of them have to... The ones that we cite most often are vehicle code sections, and the state sets a fine for most of those violations at $76 if you've looked at the attachments. $76 is a little rich. Our current fees are in the neighborhood of $20, from $20 to $30 depending on the violation. Those have been the fees for probably the last 20 years. It's time to make adjustments on that, and we'd like to move it from all of the... comes down to your alternatives. Follow staff's recommendation by adopting the attached resolution establishing uniform fines for violation of parking regulations, selected municipal codes, selected vehicle codes. Adopt the attached resolutions with amounts modified for the purpose. Reject staff's recommendations. And of course, I hope that you were recommending that you follow recommendation number one. This should have a positive impact on the city's general fund.
Questions? Steve.
And your proposed revenue enhancements.
And just so I'm not going to be captured at the end of the year, if you remember, I didn't think we would get it in code enforcement, that amount of money.
Sure.
That was where we thought it would come from. This wasn't included, so this is an unexpected revenue source, and it will exceed the $18,000.
Chief, I was teasing you, by the way. The only one that stood out to me that actually I thought maybe looked like it should be higher was the last one on the grid, the missing or incorrect registration tabs. It looked like everyone else was either 60 and then the Tascadero was at the high end of that 76.
Yeah, the actual fine for that's $135 if you don't renew the vehicle license. If you renew the vehicle license, then we charge you $40.
So that you give someone a ticket because their tags are expired, they come to the station with their new tags, and you're still going to get them for
$40.
I see.
What if they just don't forget? What if they forgot to put it on? You still
That's a different section, and that's 5204, and that would also be $40.
Better check mine.
And, you know, sometimes there's to be honest with you, there'll be a citation review board on that, and they'll make a determination if that was necessary. Some people don't put it on the right car. They put it on another car. They leave it off, and it causes a lot of downtime for us and used to a waste of our resources as we run the license plate, and it comes back registered. Now what do you do? The tag isn't there. Do you get out of the car and write it a ticket, or do you just drive by? And we have a lot of citizens in our community that are very aware of people that don't have the blue tag when they're supposed to. And this could be an interesting issue now that I think effective today, the VLF is in motion.
So just for the record, so folks that are at home know, expired registration is a $135 fine.
Yes, sir.
And you take care of that, and you get your tags, and you're going to come show the tags to the police department and pay another $40?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Thank you. That's all I have.
Anybody else?
Yeah, I had. I was wondering, well, maybe I'll just wait until it comes back after public comment, because I have some observations I wanted to make on a couple of the items.
Dee?
I just have a question on attachment one, where it says pedestrian must use crosswalks. Explain that one a little bit.
That's a section in the Uniform Traffic Code that we've located, and on Grand Avenue, you must use a crosswalk when you cross Grand Avenue. If you look in the Vehicle Code section, there's one section that talks about using crosswalks, and that's usually between two controlled intersections, such as between 8th and 9th. So you can cite the Vehicle Code section, and that's much more powerful. But if we see someone do that down in the 500 block, there's a Vehicle Code section that applies, but it's a wobbler, where this Grover Beach Muni Code section is real clear that you must use a crosswalk. So that's why that's added here.
What about 4th Street?
4th Street.
It's not in the Central Business District. This says CBD, right? It's got to be a Central Business District.
I'm sorry. Oh. Along Grand Avenue.
Right.
Okay.
It's on Grand Avenue. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Then my other questions are for later.
Any other questions? So if you have your registration in your glove box, you're in big trouble, huh?
It should be on the car.
It was. It just wasn't on the license plate. No. It was on the car. No. I never got a ticket for that, but I'm lucky. Anyway. Yeah.
You'd be surprised. We probably tow anywhere from 30 to 50 cars a year where they
after 2 months.
False tabs, or they put them on the wrong car. It does cause confusion.
Or somebody takes them off and puts them on their own.
Yes.
So you have to cut them up and then put them on.
Yes.
I
didn't say that, but
it's turning into a neighborhood watch.
Well, they will sort of borrow them.
I make sure when I put my tag on that it's clear and sticks.
Exactly.
Yeah. And what you need to do is, if you have an older car like I do, they pile up, so I scrape them off every couple of years.
Welcome to the neighborhood watch.
Is there anyone in the public that would like to speak to this item?
Now you can come up.
Come on down.
Yes.
Please state your name and address for the record, please.
My name is Dale Rice at 604 Ocean View Avenue. I think I've even talked to John about it a couple of times, but I notice a lot of problem with parking, especially behind the post office. I can go down there any day of the week, and I can probably anywhere from 5 to 10 vehicles that are there every day from opening a business till closing a business. Mm. They park and they stay. It's a 2-hour parking. I know you're not staffed for it, but it makes it really hard for people to go down and get their mail. The other spot, and I would maybe suggest a green stripe or something, is in front of the sanitation. Okay. District. You can never find a parking spot to be able to go in and pay your trash fee. I know it's not a public office, but it's something that everybody has to go in and do. There's a couple of vehicles there that are there 8 hours a day also. That's basic primary it. And the parking by in the post office especially. Thank you.
You know, the other way to maybe attack that would be to maybe take 8 or 9 of them and paint them green, those squares in the post office parking lot.
It doesn't matter what you paint them if they don't.
You got to enforce it.
And that's the issue if you've noticed, and I'm sure you have.
Well, green's 30 minutes.
Because isn't you're it? Over there. We've remarked, put up signs at the entrance to the parking lot behind the post office because we are gearing up. And same request has been made to Public Works on Grand Avenue on the two-hour limits. Part of the issue in front of the sanitation company will end when the printing company moves. Then we'll see if enforcement is necessary. There's actually two issues to some of these areas. If we clean them out, they may look empty. And so will our business district look empty. So there's a two-edged sword here. But we've spent a lot of time thinking about it, making our own little chalk markers and riding the bicycles to do it is a potential way of solving that, putting resources to it on a limited basis, because I don't have the resources to monitor all of these lots every day, every couple of hours.
What do you think about meters?
Oh, gee.
It's revenue enhancement. Yeah.
It's expensive.
Different meeting, different.
Yeah. You know, the same issues there become street cleaning. Let's put up signs, but you're talking tens of thousands of dollars to put up signs to tell people they can't park on street cleaning day, mm-hmm. and now you have to have someone that enforces it. And of course, in the city of Los Angeles, you're talking millions of dollars there in fines that they collect on those kinds of items, but they have a whole department of hundreds of employees that all they do is write parking tickets.
They don't even write them. They scan your license plate and give you a ticket. Yeah. $66 and 20 seconds. It was move your car by 4 o'clock. 4:08, I had a ticket.
Yes. And I would hope that that's part of the reason I don't want to charge the 76. I think that's not correct for our community, and that's why we picked a lower fine. And also why a lower fine is the fine has to be low enough that everyone willingly goes out and writes parking tickets. When the fines get so high, you watch the number of tickets drop too. The exception there being the handicap, and that is a horrendous fine. I think $275 for anything to do with that little blue zone. But what we find on that is tickets are waived, or then you have all the problems with the people that have the tag and they left it under the seat, and now what do you do with them? And we haven't had the heart to charge them the future coming $40, but we'll have to think about that because it's not displayed. But it costs a lot of money to write parking tickets too.
I will say that I agree with Mr. Rice, because I had a business in that area for 10 years, and I've been gone from there for 17, and it's still the same problem, so something's wrong here.
That'll be an issue once we start on Grand Avenue, and that parking lot will advertise to the public, and because they're not used to it at this point.
Yes. Okay, is there anybody else in the public that would like to make a comment or speak to this item?
Hi. Robert Hayes, insurance agent, 882 Grand Avenue. And I wouldn't like to see the 30-minute parking on Grand Avenue. I think the 2 hours is sufficient. As an insurance agent, most insurance outside of auto insurance, but other than that, we can't write a policy and service a customer within 30 minutes.
I was basically talking about in the parking lot of the post office.
Oh.
Not on Grand Avenue.
Yeah. And that's fine. And everything's $40, seems pretty fair to me. And I think the two-hour parking limit on Grand Avenue is sufficient. It gives, as a business person, it gives us enough time to service our customer, and it does eliminate the employees and long-term people from parking there. But that's all I got to say. Thank you. I support his $40. I think that should be $50.
Hi, Marcia.
Hi. I'm Maura Schiboli on it. It's 263 South 9th Street, and I think the grid is very equitable, and I think it's time that we do adjust our parking fees, and I think 2 hours on Grand Avenue is a good idea. I think I'm not a merchant. I just live south of the downtown area, and I usually walk, you know, down mm-hmm. Grand. But I think this would be probably appreciated by a lot of the merchants, too. And so I wholeheartedly, you know, stand by the proposal to enforce fees for parking violations, even if in the end it costs me extra tax money to pay for additional personnel. I think it's a great idea.
While you're there, I'd like to thank you for your for throwing your hat in the ring as far as trying to bring back some money as far as grants, and I'd like to thank you publicly for that. And I just saw your resume, and I thank you.
Thank you.
Anybody else?
Yeah, thank you, Honorable Mayor, Council Member. The other area that the council should be also aware of is that the state law encourages consistency within the county with regard to the amount of the fees, and that is one of the reasons why the chief chose to be consistent with the other entities within the county.
John, yes.
Well, I was going to hold off, but the chief said something that has kind of got me a little bothered. When you talked about, I understand the need to write a fee that's equitable, and if you get too high, then, you know, you're seeing officers or people would not write the tickets because they were rethinking that the fee's too high. Is that, let me make sure I'm understanding what you said correctly. Is that what you're saying? If the fee gets too high, then your officers who work for this community would be inconsistent or would not write the tickets?
I think what I'm saying is I'll write more if it's a lower fee. $76 or some of these fees, that's a lot of money for a lot of people here. And, you know, they're not going to stop writing tickets. They'll write tickets, but it makes it an easier sell job all the way around for us to sell it to the public, for the people that collect the fines at Financer in my front desk area. And the $40 seems a lot more reasonable with our economic surroundings.
Okay. Yeah, because I guess maybe in my naive world, my thought is if – I'm not saying go to the $76, but I am saying that if we increase the fees, I would hope that we would have consistency in how these tickets are written, and that if the tickets go down, I'm hoping it's because people are not violating the statutes. That, at least in my ideal world, is the way I kind of see it. So I just wanted to get some clarification on that. With that said, I had talked about earlier, I had a couple of areas that I was wondering if you had considered a higher fee for blocking a fire lane, unlawful parking on crosswalk, and parking in front of fire hydrants, because I think there is a message that needs to be sent. So I didn't know. I know some of the other communities charge a little higher number. Are we stopping at 40 because it is uniform? It is convenient. For bulk ticket printing. Did you consider going higher in any of these areas?
No, I was honestly looking for consistency, because when we have the different fines, then you receive parking tickets, and they all have different fines on them for the same violation. Say, parking going the wrong way. I've seen it range from $20 to $76 on our own tickets. And if it's consistent, it makes it easy for everyone all around. And the old fire lanes site was, I believe, $30, so it'll be $40. So, again, consistency, everything being the same amount. And then easier to change in the future because it's all on a single resolution.
Okay. So your perspective is that a ticket is a ticket and there's no value given for what the level of the offense is?
Well, I can't say that because we left the handicap alone. But I can't think of the last time I saw a fire hydrant here. Okay. Most of our violations are to do with the 4000A unregistered or with no tabs showing. Red zones are becoming an issue. But, you know, The others are sort of incidentals.
Yeah. Well, I must say, I'm actually glad to see that you left the handicap alone, because I think people should not be parking in those spots if they don't have a legal right to do that, and there needs to be a stiff penalty if they are parking in an area that is supposedly kept open for someone with a physical disability. I think that's all the questions and comments that I have.
No? I just quickly, I know, David, I know. Quickly, I just wanted to jump on something John said and lend some support. I provide a service to customers, and it's not law enforcement, but I think for us to feel guilty that we're charging someone $40 or $50 or $60 for violating the code, that's the cost of their decision. And if officers are comfortable enough to say, there's a cost for you to make the decision that you made, and here's what you're on the hook for the city for. It kept me from responding to service in the community. It kept other citizens in the community from parking in front of this business. I don't think we necessarily need to feel guilty about raising our fees, and the officer shouldn't feel guilty about ticketing people. I mean, that's why we have them out there. And I think it's great to see the consistency as well, but I at times, especially with the registration issue, I'd like to see it higher. So I'm done. Thank you. I promise.
Well, and I think this goes hand in hand with what we talked about as far as code enforcement, when we said that once we get a solid code enforcement program going that isn't sporadic as it is now, it's more it's equal across the board. Everyone is in jeopardy of being in jeopardy of being tagged by a code enforcement person. I think that when we look at these fines and we have an equality issue there, and everybody is fined. When we start doing it a little more, I think that it prohibits, it stops people from doing some of the things that they do now. One of my pet peeves is people that park going the opposite way. And especially when they have their truck running and there's, you know, people running in and out and there's another car at the curb, but they're parked to that next to that car going the wrong way. It's like you couldn't go around the block and pull in going the right way. I mean, it just takes too much time, doesn't it? That's one of my real pet peeves. So I'd like to see you write about 100 of those tickets in a week.
It was probably a garage sale, because at garage sales, all parking regulations are null and void.
It's generally a contractor that just is too busy to have to go around the block and park going the proper way.
Hey, man, take a deep breath.
I know. But, you know, you don't know when you come down the road if they're going to pull out or what they're going to do, because they're there in the – anyway. And I think the fines I would even say go to 45 myself. I don't have a problem with raising it to 45. That'd be my direction.
David's listening.
Across the board, $45. I don't know. Go ahead.
Thank you. I have a question here on attachment 2. Are you going to raise these also? Prohibited parking, blocking intersection, crosswalk, red zone, blocking driveway.
Now, all the tickets that I have attached.
These would all be raised to $40.
All of them also. Hate to be in Tascadero.
Well, the thing is, when you're in a Tascadero, you only do it once.
Legally, aren't you?
Yeah.
You only do it once, because when you say, wow, that cost me $76, I won't do that again.
Well, we write in the neighborhood of 1,000 parking tickets a year. And you have to, some of those are duplicates or repeats for the 4,000 A's, and there's some adjustment made for that.
So we're talking $20,000 different if we raise our fees right now.
Last year the fees were about $25,000 from parking violations.
So we can double that or triple or whatever.
Mr. Mayor.
All right.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I would like to move that we accept staff alternative number 1, which is follow the staff recommendation by adopting the attached resolution, establishing uniform fines for violations of parking regulations, selected municipal codes, and selected vehicle code sections.
I'll second that.
I'm sure you don't want to take my direction, you guys.
Yeah, really.
And I'm going to tell you what really bugs me about people parking.
Okay. roll call vote, please.
Yes.
Councilmember Eckhoff?
Yes.
Councilmember Schultz?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Sanchez?
Yes.
Mayor Armstrong?
Yes. Thank you, John.
Right, and I'd like to thank you for some of the feedback and from the feedback on the from the audience on some of these issues to do with parking or going the wrong way. It's nice to see where at least some of the people feel we should go.
Our next item, number 12, will be salary range recommendations for police lieutenant, and staff report will be by our consultant, Suzanne Bragdon. Good evening.
Yes. There we go. Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Thank you. This item was first presented to you all at your September 2nd meeting, and council directed staff to go back and meet with representatives from Pismo Beach and Arroyo Grande to look at, to see if there would be an interest at exploring further consolidation options of the police department before this council made a recommendation on salary level for the classification of police lieutenant and then moving forward on the recruitment process. This meeting took place, I believe, about 2.5 or so weeks ago, and the city managers and the police chiefs were there participating in the discussions. And a positive outcome of this was that the group did confirm some of their successes in sharing services that are already in place. And this includes things like the firing range, motorcycles, special event coverage, and I believe there's one more in the staff report, forgive me. They also talked about and reconfirmed the discussions that are underway right now, which is the consolidation of dispatch services, and recommendations are anticipated to come back for consideration of all the councils in fiscal year 2004. And then the bottom line question of an interest of further consolidation issues more broadly. And again, the discussions were of all three agencies. And the general consensus from that meeting was let's kind of go through the dispatch process. That's a major program area, and once we have that successfully under our belts, it will be more natural to move forward with further discussions of consolidation. I think most of you are familiar that the three agencies did have some very detailed discussions a number of years ago, and it fell apart for a number of different reasons, depending on who you talk to, you're going to have a little different perspective. So again, general thought was to move forward with dispatch and then take it from there. So the bottom line question in the staff report that you have before you is the salary level for the classification of police lieutenant. You know that we've had these vacancies for a very long time. The salary level that is recommended to you in your staff report is looking at internal relationships between the class of police sergeant and police lieutenant of the neighboring jurisdiction. The recommendation before you is to put a 20% differential into play, again, between sergeant and lieutenant. That would come up with a top step of 6245. But I do want to point out that our salary levels in Grover Beach include the employee's PERS contribution. You have to back out 9% from that salary level for public safety. That comes to an after PERS rate of $5,729 per month. If you look at the general top step salary ranges of the other jurisdictions, Atascadero is at the lower end of $6,048, which is still higher than the recommended salary for lieutenant here in Grover. AG is about $6,800. It then jumps in Paso and Morro Bay up to $7,200. And then Pismo Beach, which again has a commander type of structure, is $7,300. So that concludes the staff presentation. Again, the main concern is being able to recruit and retain quality positions.
Questions? D. Steve.
Can I go last?
Oh, man, I can never make you happy.
Please, Dad.
Jadave.
Our level of salaries is lower than everyone else across the board.
So across.
Why wouldn't lieutenants be lower also?
Well,
we need to base it within our own system.
Absolutely, and that's why the basic salary recommendation that is presented to you was looking at salary differentials for the other agencies. So the 20% differential between a sergeant and lieutenant, that was how we came up with that. If you looked at the differentials between all the other jurisdictions, the middle of the market was the 20%.
What's the difference between an officer and a sergeant?
A sergeant is a first-line supervisor.
No, I meant the salary differential.
I did.
If we were going to go around through the city and look at the differential between different, I don't have percentage.
Yeah, I'm sorry, I didn't calculate that. But there are two. Generally, when you're looking, your point is very well taken. When you are doing a salary analysis, when the city manager first asked me to look at this, one of the natural things, instinctual things to do is to say, okay, what are the actual salary levels in your neighboring jurisdictions? Because that's important for recruiting and retaining. However, if you were to do that when you were only looking at one classification, you would have an imbalance. Because that would basically say anytime you have a new position that you're going to be filling, if you pull that up to the middle of the market, those classifications will be in line with the market where the bulk of your organization would not. And so that's why we did the methodology where we surveyed the internal relationships. And as I recall from the staff report, that ranged from 15 to 30% in the marketplace between a sergeant and a lieutenant. And so the staff recommendation was to peg it at the 20% differential. And again, that's looking at the top step sergeant to the top step lieutenant.
Right. I was trying to look at the spread between different job classifications, not just sergeant to lieutenant. How about officer to sergeant or assistant community development director to community development director? What are we all trying to be?
Mr. Mayor,
somewhere in line.
Help. If you look at Exhibit A in the document, that's the salary schedule for all positions.
It's not by percentage.
Pardon me? Percentage is 20. It's about 20%. If you look at police officer top step of 4219 versus A step of sergeant is 4281. So it's about 20%, a little over 20%.
I apologize. I don't see that. But 4219. I don't see a 4219 anywhere. So.
If you look,
effective 9103. Okay, okay. $1,000 on 5,000. Okay.
Now the point that you're generating in terms of looking consistently throughout an organization, that's a very important point to look at when you're developing your compensation plan for your whole organization. I did do that for about 16 years. And it's very involved, and so it is a good point. My gut reaction is when your plan was first developed, I'm sure those types of considerations were taken into account. You also need to look at the type of positions that are being supervised. You need to look at the span of control. I mean, there's lots of factors that go into play.
My concern is we're going to skew this particular one out of whack with other departments in the same city, and then you're going to come back and say, well, this supervisor is 20% higher, and mine is only 14. So,
And the answer to that would be that you need to recognize the different types of supervisory relationships in an organization. When I was setting up compensation plans like this, you would see ranges between subordinates and supervisors ranging from 10% if it was like a working supervisor, all the way up to 30% if it was like a number two in charge of a department. So it does vary.
Thank you.
Any other questions? John, I'm sorry.
Yeah. Maybe this is for the chief, maybe. Curious as to the lieutenant position, what is the qualification and what type of experience are you looking for? And the reason I ask that is by increasing the salary range, are we going to be able to target the type of employee that you're looking for?
John Bradbury, Chief of Police. The requirements to be a lieutenant are the same that they were before. You're looking for someone with a four-year degree or 120 college units. The more you pay them, the more people that are going to apply. And that's why it's extremely important to keep the salary up as high as we can to attract candidates, so that we have a number of candidates, qualified candidates to choose from, candidates that have worked in that position and just aren't corporals or sergeants or people of that nature from other departments that come here and they're passing through. I'm very, very concerned about this whole issue, and it is time to move on it so that we can plan for the future.
Great. Thank you. Suzanne, in the meeting at the management level regarding opportunities to consolidate services, you had said everyone agreed that let's do the dispatch and then let's take some baby steps or incremental steps. Was there a general feeling about moving beyond that, and was it more of a wait-and-see approach?
I'm still on. I think the general feel was positive, you know, but the dispatch has been in discussion for about, I don't know, 4 or 5 months at this point in time. It's going forward. Let's see where that all goes. I think there were some individuals who did remember the situation 4 or 5 years ago and maybe had a little different taste of how that went down. But like I said, there's no consistency in terms of why what happened. And if the agencies do decide to go forward and look at full consolidation, I think all that information has to come out. And, you know, it can't be the elephant that's kind of holding discussions back. But I have the sense that everybody really is interested in opening up the discussions. It's just kind of timing.
Okay. Thank you.
Steve? Thanks, Mayor. Obviously, this was a big issue for me 2 weeks ago, and it's an issue for me tonight. I appreciate staff having the meeting. I'm still really concerned about moving forward with this, and it's tough because it's almost a separate issue. One of the other neighboring jurisdictions has an interest in doing something more than dispatch consolidation, as do some of their elected officials. I understand that we have to be good neighbors with every community involved, but at some point, if someone opts out of doing something more, we have to allow that to happen and continue to work well together. If we're looking at consolidation or sharing resources, and if it's a year or two away, I personally am uncomfortable filling both lieutenant's positions, knowing that at some point with efficiency as a justification for consolidating services, you may be terminating a position and someone may lose a job. I've thought long and hard about this, and I understand the chief's need for this key management person. I guess my question is, could we move forward with the adjustments and the active recruitment for one of the two positions while these talks continue about dispatch consolidation and at all?
I think that is something that we could certainly work within staff's purview, certainly.
It's I just personally would hate to see us go through recruitment, hire two skilled people, and then make a decision where one of them is going to be without a job.
Yeah.
And then I guess the next step is, and maybe I'll save the next one for council communications, but I would personally feel more comfortable following that mode. I do see the challenges in that. David, you said we're the lowest paying community of San Luis Obispo County. We all know that. Also with the PERS retirement and law enforcement, I know that we have some hurdles, and so I understand the need to being pretty as aggressive as we possibly can be in recruiting this position. But again, I'd like us to limit it to one at this time. Thanks.
Suzanne, it's my recollection was last month when we visited this issue, it was a 15% differential.
The staff recommendation was 20%. One council member did suggest that maybe 15% would be.
I thought it was 15 on the staff recommendation. Okay. And I do agree with Steve, and one issue is that this kind of did put some fire under the feet of the issue of talking about consolidation. And I'm glad that we kind of put some pressure there. But the other part of this whole issue is that our police department is hobbled at this point and working long hours, and there's a lot of pressure on them because they don't have as much management as they really need. And I think at this point it is important to move forward. And if someone loses a job somewhere down the road, that's something we can't foresee in any instance. So I think that, in my opinion, we move forward on this and give the police department the necessary tools they need to manage their department. We have been severely ostracized in the press and by public opinion because our police department wasn't managed properly in the past, and we had some litigation due to the fact that that happened. And if we are going to go down that road again, it seems like the reason we'd go down that road is, in my opinion, is that we don't have enough management, or management is too stressed to be aware of the whole scenario of a department at one time, and it's time to fulfill some of those management prophecies and give them the tools they need. And I think we need to move forward with two lieutenants as soon as we can.
Well said, Mayor. And I think, too, because it's going to take time before we even get to the point of consolidation, if and when we do. So I think we need to take care of our problems now and wait. We can take care of the others as they come.
Can I jump back in there?
Yes, sir, John.
Yeah, I would agree with Steve. I think there is an opportunity out there that has been expressed by members in other communities. I think in this time of obviously, we are in tough fiscal times with the state taking grabbing monies from communities, and we need to look at, are there opportunities to consolidate services? And I understand it's going to take time, you know, but sitting up here, you know, when you say time, are you talking 2-4 years? I mean, I think I can offer you an example. Was the hotel conference center, they had formed a ad hoc committee. They had moved forward with that. One of the members that was on that committee didn't win re-election, and so it died for however many years. And so I think I feel like there has been some favorable response out there, and that rather than taking a wait-and-see approach, I'd like to see if we can't start going down that road now. And if it takes 2 years, so be it. But let's at least start the dialogue. And I'm not going to go as far now as to suggest, you know, how we go about that. I do believe that if we hire two lieutenants, you know, I think Steve is exactly right. I mean, if we do get to the point that we do consolidate services, is someone going to lose their job? And so I think we need to be open-minded and see if there are ways for us to consolidate services. So I would support one lieutenant, and I haven't decided on if it's 20% or 15%, but I just wanted to go on record and let you know what I'm thinking on that, Mayor.
Can I say something in kind of response to what you're saying? We have a city manager's agenda item number 13 that basically is asking for a date with that community. I think we're talking about the same community, Pismo Beach. We're talking about they have the community of Pismo Beach having some interest in consolidation of police services. Maybe at this joint meeting that we're asking for to award bids, maybe we can have an item that's just discussion on police consolidation, fire. Where are you guys going? What do you think? Maybe that's another item we put on that meeting that night.
There's no faster way to kill that idea than to do that. Without any kind of information, it will bomb, and it will kill it before you ever get it off the ground.
Well,
I would think.
I don't know.
Can I jump in?
I'm just throwing it out. Yes, sure.
I was saving this for council communications, and maybe we're drifting too far from this agenda item, but we all got in a Friday packet a document from the International Association of Police Chiefs, and I had found that on the Internet previously, and I've read it several times. It kind of lays out the process. If there's interest, you have a facilitated workshop facilitated by professional people from law enforcement. You have the police chiefs. You have some line personnel. You have your city managers. You have your elected officials. And in that type of form, you decide, is this something that makes sense for all of us? And you take the next baby step from them. From that, I was going to look to see in council communications if there was consensus to agendize an item where we might throw that invitation out to both cities. And just kind of follow that format. It's pretty straightforward. And it seems pretty objective.
Okay. Back to item number 12.
Did you make the motion, David?
Well, we haven't taken public comment, but I know John had basically. Well, let's take public comment and then we'll come back and discuss it more. Does that sound okay? Or anybody in the public like to speak to this issue? Well, okay. You are not in favor. I'm sorry.
David was going to make a motion.
Well, I know that John had said something about he wasn't really in favor of 20%. He was more in favor of 15%. So,
yeah,
I don't know if there was more discussion in that realm. We talked about two lieutenants as versus one, and we got some discussion on that, but we really didn't discuss too much about compensation.
Well, maybe if I can try a motion here, and I'm sure the city attorney or someone can correct me if I word this wrong.
Perhaps if I could, sorry to interrupt you, but one of the issues that I think is really important, and it's in the staff reports, but we haven't really highlighted, and that is that police lieutenants do not get paid overtime. Police sergeants get paid overtime. Senior police officers get paid overtime. Police officers get paid overtime. So when you're talking about a level of position where folks work the number of hours that are necessary when you're in management, and if the differential is only 15% above what somebody who's getting paid overtime, that differential evaporates. So unless it's in the 20% range or more, as some organizations have here in the county, there's not a reflection for that kind of commitment to a management level position. So that's why we have recommended the 20%.
Maybe my follow-up question to that then is, why is 15% an alternative in the staff report?
Because one other agency in the county is at that level at 14%. That agency is, as I recall, CS San Luis Obispo, and they have a very they have a higher level of senior police officer than we do, and so that's why that differential and the way they get to that senior police officer is really a longevity and working in different areas. You're able to build up credits, and it's a way to get longevity of employees, and so that differential is less there. And because that differential exists someplace in the county, I think that's why Suzanne identified that as an alternative for the council.
Ellen, one of the things I was going at here, too, is that the fact that we're talking 15 and 20, there's no reason this council can't settle on 17.5 either. I don't
think that's right.
Well, you know, I'm just saying that.
No, you're right. I agree.
If we're unhappy with one or the other. So that's why I was throwing that issue out before we got into a some kind of a motion. So,
well, I'd like to try and make a motion. I move that we adopt a resolution amending classification and compensation plan for the lieutenant's position with consistent with alternative two, 15% pay differential, with direction to hire one lieutenant and to agendize a workshop inviting the cities of Pismo Beach and Rio Grande to explore consolidation options.
I'll second that.
Can I have a roll call vote, please?
Yes.
Councilmember Lieberman?
Yes.
Councilmember Ekwall?
No.
Mayor Pro Tem Santos?
No.
Mayor Arnoldson?
No.
Okay. I'm going to go with alternative two, which establishes a salary range for police lieutenant to reflect a 20% differential between the top step police sergeant and the top step police lieutenant, and adopt the resolution amending the classification and compensation plan to reflect the new salary range for the class of police lieutenant.
Okay. I'll second that.
Motion and second. Roll call vote, please.
Yes.
Yes.
No.
Scholes?
No.
Mayor Arnoldson?
No.
Let me try this again.
Sure.
I'll adopt resolution amending classification and compensation plan for the lieutenant with alternative B, which is 20%, with the direction that you hire one lieutenant and agendize a workshop inviting the communities of Pismo Beach and Oro Grande to explore consolidation options.
Is discussion before or after you get a second?
After.
Second. Discussion.
Okay, discussion.
Perhaps that we can amend the motion to take the workshop piece out and reproach that during council communications to see if there's consensus for that.
I'm wondering if we break the motion up, we leave that out, we get through the first phase, and then we try and give staff direction to agendize discussion to where we set up a workshop.
Okay. The motion maker may amend the motion to exclude that piece, and I'm not sure. And the motion would not be necessary to agendize something. You can simply direct staff to agendize the next item for the next meeting, the item pertaining to the workshop.
So then I will accept Councilman Lieberman's suggestion. I will drop off the discussion about agendizing the workshop. So adopt the resolution with the 20% differential for the lieutenant position with the direction that we hire one lieutenant at this time.
Second.
Okay, discussion. Well, there's discussion then.
Yes, go, Dave.
I'm objecting to that simply because of the we have a setup in our police department with two lieutenants now, and I think that it is so far down the road to any kind of consolidation that you're talking about not 6 months or a year, you're talking about several years or many years or something like that. And so to kind of rearrange our staffing of the police department, that's what you're doing. You're eliminating one lieutenant's position almost indefinitely.
Well,
I'm not going to support that. So anyway, my discussion is I'm just a little concerned about the salary level. But I think we need to allow him to hire two lieutenants.
Well, why don't we ask the chief or even the city manager if he feels that his department can function with one position filled at this time? That doesn't preclude them from hiring someone else further down the road if it's necessary.
But well, your motion is only funding one.
Yeah.
He can't. Yeah, let's go back to you two.
Actually, my motion isn't funding. My motion is to increase the salary range, but I'm trying to provide direction on whether it's one or two. Now, staff should tell us, can we do that? And if not, that's what we pay them for. So someone please speak up.
The CMR.
But I thought you asked for one.
I think they already did.
The CMR already said they could.
One way to look at this is to go ahead with the 20% and recognize that there are two authorized positions and recognize that those are positions within the city service and that the police chief and I can make sure that we are staffing at the appropriate level given the policy kind of direction that the council is expressing. So we would not fill a position unless we needed to have a position filled. And We, I think, feel that we definitely need to fill at least one lieutenant position at this point in time, and that we would work on alternatives for being able to work around that in the short run.
And under my discussion, I think the only reason I didn't go with Dave and Dee's motion, the motion made, I don't remember who made first and second, but I was trying to meet the compensation level somewhere in the middle as I spoke, 17 and a half or something like that. But I still feel that staff needs direction to hire two people. That's basically what they're asking for.
I don't understand what the city manager just told us.
He said they'd like
to hire one, but you're going to work around it somehow.
Yeah, let me put everyone up. I'm going to withdraw my motion.
Okay.
I have one discussion item. David, for the last two times we've talked about this, you're solidly convinced that any change in the way we do business or provide services to our communities, just it's a given that it's going to take years. And past experience with this particular issue, I truly believe in looking at the facts and the way it went down, it wasn't a healthy process. It got flawed. I can tell you, because I've spoken to people in one of the two communities that's impacted by this discussion, that they're very open to moving forward with this discussion. And so to address your specifics about timing, I think it's just timing's however we define the time, what we want it to be or what it should be. But if someone's willing to do something in a more expeditious manner, I don't think we should discount that.
No. Susan gave us a report that they talked about this, and they said, let's do one thing at a time, and let's start with dispatch and see how that goes. And that's no small task in itself. And so you, again, are down the road.
Right.
And I think you made it very clear that it's going to be way down the road before we even get to that point. And I think Ron, our mayor, made it very clearly that we know from past experiences that we need leadership in that department right now.
Certainly.
Well, I don't think either one of us are saying throw out dispatch. We think that is a logical first step. I think what I know what I'm trying to say is let's establish and let's a framework and let's start going down that road. I mean, I'm not saying throw out dispatch and it's all or nothing. I'm saying let's not just do dispatch and then take a wait-and-see approach. We think that the stars have kind of aligned to where there are people in other communities who are receptive now. Why not have that dialogue now to see if, in fact, they are sincere about moving in that direction? That is merely all we're trying, at least I'm trying to see or get out of this discussion and this debate.
But I think on our staff report here, the subject was salary range recommendation for police lieutenant. That's what we're supposed to be voting on.
Understood, but I think what Steve so eloquently stated was that, you know, are you looking 20 years down the road? If you've got two lieutenants position, if we consolidate services, people will start to lose jobs, and that is a tough issue that you may not need to deal with, but someone in the future may need to deal with. So we need to try and have some foresight. And that if we are successful in going down this road, that people don't lose their jobs. We don't hire them only to turn around and let them go.
Mayor, if I could, I think that staff has been attuned to what the council has been saying with regard to moving towards consolidation ever since April. We have been working on the issue. It is something that we probably haven't been keeping the council as informed on as we make individual successes along that way, and we need to do a better job of that. At the same time, whenever I look at filling any vacancy in the city, I am trying to be mindful of looking to the future. And for example, there is an individual in this department in a key position who's going to be retiring in December. And we are working around that so that we don't fill that position because it plays into how we might deal with communications, dispatch, records, consolidation with other agencies. So we're already making those kinds of plans and looking towards the future. So the fact that we need at least one lieutenant now is something we've made clear to the council, and I think the council has made clear that you support that, and that having the authorization to go to a second lieutenant doesn't mean we would fill it, doesn't mean we would fill it at that level, and it doesn't mean we wouldn't come back and talk to the council about it at when we feel a strong need to deal with it in any. So I guess that's what I would recommend, that you go along with staff recommendation and trust that we will involve the council before we would ever consider filling the second position.
Okay, David, you make a motion.
Well, we're still on the same issue.
Yeah.
Or two issues, I think, because there's some concern about the 18% or the 20%. There's some concern there. I mean, if we're just in discussion, based on what the city manager has just explained, if we could make a motion adopting the wording that you just suggested, I mean, that's something I could get behind.
I would support that, and I would support 17.5%.
But I think we have to reflect back what Susan said when she made her her staff report. By upping the wage, we got better quality of applicants when they applied. We're doing the same thing, I feel, in this particular position also.
Well, I think
because if not, they're going to go on to the next city, and here we are again.
I think you're talking about $100 or $150 a month. Mm-hmm.
I would hope you as a council would give us the opportunity to have the two lieutenants. Doesn't mean we're going to fill them. I could have filled them in the last year, and I haven't.
Well, that's what I don't understand. You're saying you're going to come back to us for a decision. You have two positions allocated, and if we set a salary now for a lieutenant's position, why can't you advertise for two? Why do you come back to us at all?
I would like to fill both of them, but that it leave the choice to us. Somewhere, someone is going to have to do the work. I'm holding two vacancies now in case both lieutenants come from the outside. If I don't get a lieutenant, I'll probably get a police officer. Someone could eventually lose their job down the line. If you look at all of you as you sit up here talking about 15, 17 and a half, 20%, this is one of the big issues of the four when it comes to consolidation. Wait until you deal with labor and all the difference in the contracts and the perks here and the perks there. Mm-hmm. We're having trouble tonight. Consolidation, you have to deal with labor, you got to deal with the public, you got to deal with the political, and you got to deal with the financial ends of it. And as Steve said from the report, this isn't something, even if we want, it's going to happen tomorrow. Mm-hmm. And some of the people that are going to carry this forward are lieutenants, and I don't have those kinds of people right now to do the job because we're doing other things. It's time to bring us current. In the next couple of years, people in their other departments may be leaving. Someone may leave from our department. If we give up dispatch right away, that doesn't necessarily mean either PISMO or us or our AG are going to give up a lieutenant. But, you know, we need to progress on this. But right now, we're talking about what we're going to do. And, you know, as Dave said, what are we talking, $150 a month? Allow us to go ahead, advertise for the two positions, get a list, see where we're at, fill one of the positions, and if it's someone from the outside, there will be a training and education program there. I would hate to think, unless the city manager insisted, that I hired two newbies, and then we were trying to train them all at once. But the idea that we're being restricted when we're the ones that are going to have to do this, I would hope, you know, it comes back to, again, do we have a level of trust? Consolidation, I will tell you, I think it's a good idea. But when you deal with some of these other issues, it just doesn't happen. Technology, we could do it to tomorrow. But it's that financial, political, labor union type thing, issues that are going to tie this up for a while. Three at 50, three at 55, or two at 50 like us. Mm-hmm. You know, these are some of the things that why, as we move forward and meet with different groups and get some kind of consensus, we'll be able to come up with a plan that'll work.
Isn't that an issue you're dealing with now, though, Chief, in trying to recruit these positions? The benefits package, two at 55, three at 60. I mean, you're dealing with the same issues now.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah, but when you talk consolidation, if we go with other agencies, I don't think we're going to go backwards.
Well, no one's oversimplifying this, and I think we understand it's a complex issue. Mm-hmm. You know, we just want to, I just want to make sure that we are not closing any loops or any opportunities out by being short-sighted. And I, you know, maybe I'm way off track here, but to hear that there are others in other communities who've expressed interest, and we don't know how long that's going to last, and maybe it just takes getting into a room and really seeing if they're sincere. Now, I guess it is a trust issue, you know, if we obviously, you know, I said this at the last meeting. Every time we turn around, we've got adjustments to salaries, and I'm sorry that obviously the lieutenants are the ones who finally have kind of pushed me over the edge, but, you know, I guess I'm willing to compromise, and that's why I was talking about 15%, because the argument of overtime and no overtime doesn't carry as much weight with me as it may with other folks, and the fact that people who are typically higher in management have a lot better perk than the folks who are working overtime, and you can only work so much overtime because at some point you want to see your family. So mm-hmm. that doesn't sway me to go to 20%. That's why I was talking 15%.
But I would ask you, what perks do the lieutenants have that the sergeants don't already have? You have people last year that made more than the chief of police due to overtime, and it's not because they worked more hours than I did. But this is an issue that we have to come back to. At 15%, I'll get fewer people. At 15%, a sergeant can do that in overtime.
Believe at 20% you're going to get qualified people to fill this position? I asked you that earlier.
The little bit of difference that Susan talked about in the pay at that range helped. And we're talking a lot less.
Not to belabor this point, but I do recall what Susan brought forward, and it is a different story. It is a little different.
And it was more than 5%, too.
Well, yeah, it was, and I guess that was an area in which I had experience, and I know what that range was, even though we were still lower than everyone else. We knew. I felt that we would be able to attract qualified candidates. I'm just not convinced at this point that the lieutenant is, if we're going to get those qualified folks that we're looking for. And that's just something I have to work through. That's nothing, you know, not pointing a finger at you or anything else. It's just something I'm trying to work through for myself.
And like when I hire the last hired officer that's under the COPS grant, I tell him that you'll be the first to go if the COPS grant is not funded by the state. And I see this being the same type of statement you make with the lieutenants that you hire. Hey, if we consolidate, your position could be eliminated. So they know that going forward. Okay. Yeah. Like I say, I'm not insisting that I hire two people the day the list is certified either. Okay. There are practicalities, but I just hate to have that opportunity taken away before all the facts. By the time this list is certified and given to us 5, 6, 7 months from now, we'll have had some of these meetings. Maybe we'll know we're going forward and there is that, this is going to happen quicker than we think, or we'll know, gee, it's not happening. We need to plan for the future. Thank you.
Excuse me, Mr. Mayor. I'm sorry. With this little discussion, staff's role is to be sure we're giving you accurate information to make your determinations. And there was one point that the city manager made that kind of made a light bulb go off in my head, and this was where in San Luis Obispo, the only city that had the 15% differential between their sergeant and their lieutenant, because of the size of their organization, their lieutenant is more like a watch commander as opposed to what we're looking for in our jurisdiction. And I apologize for not clarifying that in the report, but I think that is important. The overtime issue that the city manager raised, I've been at the table for a lot of public safety negotiations. That is truly, truly huge. So I just want to add that information for your deliberations.
Thank you, Suzanne.
Well, that clarified everything. What do you guys want to do?
we're all pulling in a different direction that way.
I think that was a great point, because San Luis Obispo actually has a captain's rank. So we're kind of in between mm-hmm. there. Again, I mean, I'm more than willing to support a motion where we adopt the 20%. We go to recruitment, but we get with clear direction from staff that we're, you know, focused on one position at this time, and you would come back and justify to us filling a second position. And I liked the chief's timeline. You know, we could start those negotiations with the other communities. By the time the eligibility list comes back, we'll have yeah. some idea of what the next step is.
So was that a motion?
That is my motion.
Second. Motion and a second. Roll call vote, please.
Can we discuss that? What's the difference in doing it now or then?
Doing what now or then?
Getting the two sergeants. I mean, we said we weren't going to fill them exactly right now. Mm-hmm. So what is the difference?
I think Chief Bradbury kind of explained that. Didn't you, Chief?
I believe what I said is I'd like to have the authority and to hire two. It didn't necessarily mean that we would hire two. By the time that list gets here, the circumstances could have changed. They may be more positive toward consolidation. They may be less positive. And at that point, you know, city manager, myself, and human resources decide that, because that's our job. And obviously, a lot of inputs come here tonight. And I can tell you that in my conversations, we haven't planned to hire both of them at the same time anyway. But what I'm asking you for is that authority to do that if that's necessary without having to come back and do this, taking into consideration what's been said.
Also, I thought I'm hearing that you're saying 67 months to get a list anyway.
He's just throwing numbers out.
Did I take too long? Okay.
We're geared up probably within 3 months.
Okay. Do you advertise for two positions when there's two positions that are technically open? Wouldn't you say two lieutenant positions?
I don't know.
I would think that would increase your
you know, my gut reaction is no. Because if people are qualified, I wouldn't think they would bet on the come about, oh, there's two positions, I've got a better chance, I'm going to put my resume in, where if there's only one, I'm not going to bother. That's just my take.
But even if we advertise for two, it doesn't mean you have to fill them. We're establishing a list, and that's all we're doing.
Well, conversely, if you advertise for one, doesn't mean you can't fill two. I mean, if you get a list.
Think of it.
I mean, you get two good candidates, and you need the second person anyway. We had a motion and a second. Is there any more discussion?
I'd like to know, what's the motion on the floor?
I don't remember.
Please.
We'll focus on one hire and justify following the second position.
So it's putting off the decision for the second.
Just staff coming back to us, saying we have a note.
Yeah.
Then we have to go through all this again, right?
Isn't this fun?
That's my motion. I don't know if there's a second.
Roll call. There was. I
seconded it. Oh, you did. Okay.
Roll call vote, please.
Councilmember Lieberman?
Yes.
Mayor Arnoldson?
Yes.
Councilmember Ekblom?
What was he called, that? Yes.
So he made the second.
Mayor Pro Tem Santos?
Yes.
Councilmember Schultz?
Yes.
Now, I have a question. Now, if we do get a police lieutenant and say 6 months down the road, and he comes back and says we want another one, do we have to go through this whole big process again?
We certainly wouldn't have to discuss how much the compensation was. And the commitment I made was that I would come back to the council and let the council know this is the reason why we think we need to fill this position at this time. And again, I think what the chief was saying is really important to recognize that the time that it's going to take to get a list we're also going to be working on consolidation discussions. And how much progress we make could have a significant impact on whether we would be making any recommendations with regard to filling a second position. And as I said, we already are working around a planned retirement of a key staff person that would be involved in dispatch and records kinds of activities, simply because we are seriously pursuing consolidation and have been since April.
Thank you.
Is there any way someone can check on the air conditioning? Is it warm in here? Is it just me?
And Mayor, if I could jump in, I just wanted to say that, Suzanne, the information that you provided regarding the city of San Luis Obispo was helpful in helping me make my decision. Thank you.
Nice report.
This kind of works into a comment I wanted to make and see if there's any interest in just a discussion item, not necessarily a action item on an agenda, future agenda. And that would be a discussion of salaries in general. When most of us talk to our constituents, they're kind of appalled that we continue to raise salaries. They're kind of appalled that there's, you know, it just keeps going and going and going. And most of us run on the platform that, you know, we're tired of it, we're going to stop and stuff. But we get in a discussion like this, and you know, it looks like we're damned if we do and damned if we don't. Mm-hmm. And but you know, when you have a conversation with someone that works for a major private, I just like to have a discussion where we not only have some information about why we justify positions and salaries, but also a discussion about what really happens in the industries that we don't relate to. And I don't know if anybody else is interested in that discussion, but I think it would be a discussion that would be very informational and hopefully get some public input on it. Like a town hall meeting discussion item only, not any direction.
Town hall meeting, I'm not sure you're going to get that's more opinions than
I'm
it
just
is.
Saying it's an item where we discuss it. We don't come to a decision. We just kind of kick around where the future's going, what we've done in the past, what does the private sector do? Why are we always comparing ourselves with Arroyo Grande and Pismo Beach? And you can see on this data that we got today, Arroyo Grande and Pismo Beach had a different skew on their salaries than did Morro Bay, Atascadero, San Luis. I mean, they were higher than all of those agencies as far as the increment between their sergeant and their lieutenant.
Mayor, if you recall, we are committed by contract with one bargaining group and one unrepresented group to conduct a salary survey and also to look at comparable job descriptions so that we know we're comparing apples and apples, and further, that we look at ability to pay. And so that, I think, would start to address the kinds of issues that you're raising, because not only do we compare with other organizations, because we are competing with them, in a sense, for the same labor market, but also if we were to look at that in terms of our ability to pay, what our resource base is compared to what their resource base is, that's the element that's often missing in that kind of analysis. We are committed to doing that, and it would be helpful, I think, at addressing that question.
Well, and that's kind of what I'm saying, is that when we go through these discussions, we don't really bring forward those negotiations we've made with these different groups and what those negotiations basically are. We have an item on a consent agenda that pretty much flashes over that whenever we make an agreement. And that's all I'm just saying. It's just an educational agenda item that gives the general public an idea of really where are, you know, why we're caught in a rock between a rock and a hard space, because I'm sure we've all said, boy, this year, you know, these guys are really, you know, every year it's the same thing. We there's never a question of, am I going to get a raise? The question is, how much will I get this year? And we look at inflation, and when you look at all the public employees in this country, what really drives inflation? They get a raise every year. Why won't inflation go up if 90%, you know, 50% of the people in the country get a raise?
Some number, because sooner or later we're going to end up paying 100% of our income in.
Can we agendize this if we want to talk about it? Or, I mean, okay. Isn't that,
well,
that's all I'm
asking. I think we're
for.
Waiting for that salary survey to come out.
Okay.
So until we have that, there isn't going to be a lot of discussion.
The concept was that we would have that, the answer to that before January 1st of 2005. And if we want to move that up, then we would have to come forward with an amendment to the annual appropriation resolution to identify funding to, because the commitment is to hire a consultant to do that, so that it's an independent third party kind of thing.
I'm just asking if anybody's interested in an agenda item. I don't know if you guys, if am I hearing any yes or no or don't care. Or?
No, I'm definitely open to it, but okay. I don't know what the timing is of the salary survey that we're anticipating.
I don't know if we're going to wait until 2005. Yeah. that's a year away. I'm not going to be here. don't cheer at one time now.
I was going to say, lucky you.
Yeah.
Let's bring that up later.
Okay, well, I just threw that out. Let's move on to council committee reports. Thank you for turning the air conditioning on. I appreciate it.
Are we on 13?
Dave, do you have any council committee reports?
No. 13? Yeah, 13.
Oh, is it 13?
Where's 13?
No, I mean,
no.
You're sitting, joint council meeting?
Yes. No, that's, we have council committee reports before that.
Okay. I have nothing.
I have two things. There was a skate park advisory board meeting last week. The advisory board asked staff to consider kind of amending the signage policy to allow families to buy sign sponsorships in the park. You know, the XYZ family supports recreation in Grover Beach for a lesser price, just because we're kind of pricing ourselves. We're excluding a segment of the community. In the past, the sign ordinance was concerned with First Amendment issues, where an organization could say whatever slogan they wanted. And again, I don't know if this is reaching has reached the city attorney yet, but it's literally family name on a smaller sign for a given price. And that was probably the biggest issue that came out of that meeting. Also had a Recreation Commission meeting last week. The pumpkin and the Carved Pumpkin Festival is the 30th, so please get your costumes in order, and referee costumes don't fly anymore.
That's Thursday.
We need to get this.
Jeez, I pulled that out last night.
Yes, that was weak. So, and again, they're always looking for volunteer help. I know that the little sprout was cooking hot dogs last year, and it's a neat event. Everyone's always there, and the kids love it. They're there moving the parades up to an earlier time, so we don't exclude any of the little ones, and the carnival will be there, and it should be a great time.
Oh, Amy Hardee's.
That's all. Thank you.
That's a hint on what I'm going to be.
Me Hardee's.
Bozo?
You got it? Bozo the Pirate.
Okay.
Who's next? Who wants to be next?
It's coming to the Planning Commission and City Council by the end of the year, or maybe Susan can. No? Okay. Staff is reviewing the draft noise ordinance, so.
I broke the news to Jake today at lunch that he's a member of TANG, so I think that we'll start to see that.
You have to wear an orange outfit.
Yeah, the space travel.
Yeah. No, just not making light of it. I do believe the group has done some great work in trying to put together a noise ordinance that fits Grover Beach. And so I'd like to recognize their efforts. And in all seriousness, I do believe a draft will be coming to the advisory bodies in the very near future.
And the other issues on the forefront in that committee are 24-hour parking and vehicle parking on the street, and we're kind of hashing that out and going through that, and that'll probably be coming forward too as some type of recommendation with RV vehicles, boats, cars that are unable to move. So I think we're gonna see some recommendations in that forefront too.
I think we'll see a crowded council chamber.
probably.
Okay.
The only thing I can probably add to anything is the Zone 3. I believe we came back with a bid to put in a filtering system to take care of the treatment plant. That was a $1.9 million, but over the long haul, it's about a $20 million upgrade of the treatment plant. And I wish I'd have brought in one of the filters. They're actually, they look like a they look like a little straw, and the water goes in the side and then goes up, and that eliminates I think it's the bacterial and everything else. The chemical is taken out chemically prior to that, and then the bacteria contamination is taken out there. So, and it's really amazing. They have these little group of straws, for lack of a better term, that are about, I think they're 6 or 7 feet tall, and they can filter a lot of water. So that's the process that looks like it's going to be recommended to the county supervisors to move forward on our treatment plant. And we, on the sanitation district, we're still trying to fight with the county health department. They are moving forward with a sludge ordinance, and they keep lowering the amount of sludge that can be stored on or disposed of, and we have what we call EQ sludge in the at our South County Sanitation District, and we're about the only sanitation district in the community in the county that has EQ. So we're pretty much the target. There's 2,500 cubic yards that can be disposed of a year, or that's what we asked for, and they've lowered it to 1,100. So they keep lowering it and lowering it. I've talked to Supervisor Asajian and asked to have some support if this goes forward to the supervisorial, when it goes to the supervisorial agenda. And it's a major item for us, because
ability of the council to participate in that kind of an activity with the members of the Pismo Beach City Council in order to award the bid for the promenade.
So will we schedule a meeting for both, or at that meeting just schedule the bid, and then somewhere down the road schedule a groundbreaking? Or?
Right. For example, it seems like the last time we went through this exercise, the Pismo Council came over here. It was like a half hour, an hour before a regular council meeting here. One option might be to do the opposite, for us to go over there a half hour, an hour before a regular council meeting there.
When are there meetings?
Tuesday, right?
First and third Tuesdays.
Yeah, Tuesday.
In the morning or?
No.
Starting at 6:30.
Yeah. Oh, at night.
Yeah. So that would be the 21st?
The first. Do they have a schedule that they requested? Is there a date that they liked at this point? Or
anytime after the 13th.
Okay. You said the
21st? The 21st is their, 21st, 21st. Tuesday, their third Tuesday.
That works for you? How about everybody else?
That works for me.
Yeah. That's great. And I think as long as we get a quorum there, that's all we need. Let's not try to wait until everybody can make it. If somebody can't,
well, we all can make it, though.
Okay.
So now I guess the question is, does he not want us all there?
You know what? He never says anything at these meetings anyway, so, you know, it doesn't matter whether he's there or not. So.
Yeah.
21st sounds like a go for everybody, huh?
Yes. Except for Pismo.
6:30.
Okay. Well, it'll probably be 6. They
six?
It may be before their meeting.
5:30.
It sounds like that's...
But Donna will inform us.
21st down, whatever time, it doesn't matter, I guess, for us. Huh? If they want to do it during their meeting or before their meeting?
Before probably would work.
Before.
Okay, before. Preferably.
Would the council wish to give us a second option in the event that Pismo Beach, for whatever reason, are not ready for us on the 21st?
Yeah.
Yeah, it works.
What was the second date?
The 20th here.
At 5:30, did you say?
Man, then we got to feed them.
We do? Never did before. Shouldn't take more than a half an hour.
If we go over
6 o'clock.
We can go to McClintock's.
One meeting.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, we can.
Does that work for everybody? 20th or 21st? Okay, moving along.
I just need staff to get back to us.
Finish for the 21st, so we have in.
14th, 2003, Community Goal Number 3, investigate alternatives for financing major capital improvements.
Mayor, members of the City Council, as you know, back in April or in May, the council came up with 17 goals. One of the top goals of that was to look at the option of financing, for example, street improvements. If we were to do all of the local...
Using major capital to fund street maintenance and related types of items. We want them to assess the pros and cons of these alternative financing strategies, and we're also asking them to estimate, of course, the debt requirements and then do an assessment of the impacts on our debt capacity in Grover, because obviously you don't want to put all your eggs in one basket necessarily. So we should have those bids back by the end of the month.
Great. Two questions. How many did you send out?
We will be sending them out this week. I believe we have a list of about 15 firms.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
We went on the CSMFO listserv to see what other agencies, what other financial advisory firms they were using.
Did that include any local firms in this area?
I don't recall, but we could do a local advertisement as well.
Thank you.
John, wasn't that your friend that gave us that talk on it?
Well, it was. I think A.G. Edwards is a local firm.
Okay.
The lady who
I thought she was out of L.A.
presentation I just met, but
I had a question. At that meeting, we talked about a city credit rating, and we said we didn't know if we had one or how to get one. Or that was something that she suggested we establish. Or.
That's part of the process of that a financial advisor deals with.
Okay. Thank you.
Is that it? Everybody
said
it? Yep. All right. Item number 15, 2003, Community Goal XIB, or as we say here in Grover, 11B. Enhanced communications with City Council and the community. Town Hall meeting of September 15, 2003. Information item only.
Again, this is another follow-up. Suzanne's been working on it, so asking her to let the council know where we are.
Yeah, the town hall meeting, which you've already spoken to, was marvelous. And as someone who was new to Grover Beach, it was really fantastic for me, and I was really amazed by all the information that was shared and exchanged and the positive environment. What we wanted to do quickly tonight was just let you know that we are following up on that meeting, so it's not just a great meeting that's over and done with. We are in the process of preparing a special report that highlights the issues that were raised, the answers that were given, and there's always more information to share as well. The topics that we've kind of grouped the information together are in your staff report, and the special report probably will be out by the end of this week. We're also looking at preparing some PowerPoint presentations that can go on cable TV as well as the website. And I've also already had a discussion with Donna on doing a more abbreviated version of the town hall meeting and sharing of information for your next issue of the Seabreeze.
Great.
So again, just another FYI.
Way to go, Dave.
And number 16 kind of backs up to that. Do you want to go ahead and talk about the voicemail also at this time?
Believe it or not, that is with your city manager.
What we have done with regard to the voicemail. The council was good enough to appropriate money in this fiscal year for us to deal with the implementation of voicemail. We have talked to other cities in the county to ask about the approach that they use. Two cities mentioned we felt that this was the most expeditious way to get the system implemented and to get the service that the council has asked us to provide to the residents. And that is a fairly quick turnaround that we would expect from the process. We have an agreement that we've negotiated, and city attorneys reviewed the agreement, and we're prepared to initiate that as of tomorrow. So it's just kind of a status report on that.
Okay, item number 17 is city council agenda, and city council participation in the Grover Beach annual holiday parade and other community events. Someone must have brought that up from the city council.
Not me.
It's a city council agenda item.
Me.
Oh, gosh.
Wait,
there it is.
I've been sitting here quietly all. No. One of the things that I had thought for us as a council, you know, we went to the team building workshop and stuff, and since we do represent our city, I think it's about time that we get back to the old-fashioned way of being in our own parades and being in other parades with other cities that we used to do, and to participate in the community events and be visible out there.
I'm going to be at the pumpkin costume.
You can't even say it much less.
Oh, well, that's it. It's late, man. It's carved pumpkin contest in a costume. So there.
Good. And so am I.
Yeah, I agree.
So is John.
We got a rope. We got a tree. What we need is a referee.
For a family.
I noticed at the Harvest Festival parade that none of the city councils, including Royal Grande in their own parade, wasn't part of it. And I thought that was a shame. And I was thinking back to years ago when all of the cities used to participate in each other's parades just as a show of support for their neighboring cities. I mean, as well as, I think, a little display of camaraderie or teamwork amongst our own council.
I mean, there
and
was
we've gone our different ways, apparently, in a lot of our parades. Everybody's in their own vehicle for different reasons or something. And I think it loses some of the cohesiveness of a council. And
I mean,
so
because
I can't agree
was,
with you.
Excuse me, Dave. I'm sorry.
True.
There was times that when we had the kazoo band. We'd do the kazoo band, and then we'd hurry up and or ride as a council together, then hurry up and get back in line and go with the kazoo band. And that was lots of fun. So we were actually in it twice. But it's just a thought that maybe we could start doing this again. You know, be it families or whatever, but we need to get back in there.
I kind of feel embarrassed. Maybe it's just me. I feel embarrassed being in the parade. I feel like a goofball when I'm sitting there as a city council person. And it's just me, I'm sure. I don't know that people really, I don't know. I just feel like it embarrasses me. Maybe it's because I'm shyer than you really think, but it does feel weird to me. But maybe we can take that one step farther and really be crazy, huh? Be a stick horse posse of the...
You guys have a great time on your stick horses.
We can put you in the ambulance and open the doors.
No, I think it's an important thing. Yeah, that's true.
Go and post a lot.
No, I think I think that's what makes our town a neat small town. That parade's really well-received every year, and I think we all need to be in it, whether it's in individual vehicles. And I know the public works vehicle is really nice, but my kids love going. And there's an insurance issue with family members on that vehicle, so that's why we always end up doing something else.
But we used to ride Mr. Greenhouse's car and stuff, but we could get a truck and put you in a wheelchair. And
thank you.
Well, maybe we could borrow a certain person's fire truck or something, and all family members could be. And that might be less less embarrassing to me if there are family members and stuff. I just feel like, and I don't know.
Ron, can you and I take our dogs?
Sure.
Thank you, baby.
Okay. Yeah.
Moving on.
Good. Maybe we can think about that a little bit, huh?
Let's just do it.
Okay, Nike. All right. We're going to move into public communications again. Anybody that would like to speak at the podium for 3 minutes, and then the drill.
Susan Zalischuk, Assistant Community Development Director. I just had an announcement, and want to make sure that folks out there in the audience and at home are aware that the Community Development Block Grant applications have been distributed and are available. They're available here at City Hall. They're also available on the city's website. You can download it and print it off there. And they are due here at City Hall by 5 p.m. on October 20th. Hmm. So that's the due date for those applications. There will be a CDBG, Community Development Block Grant, workshop on October 9th. So we'll look forward to assisting anybody with information needs and procedurally how to go about it. The representative from the county, Tony Navarro, will be here to assist with that. It is the same night as the Grover Beautiful meeting. Will be, depending on the turnout, will either be in the small room next door or perhaps, I haven't talked to Jack yet, but maybe borrow the fire station meeting room back there. So, and if we move off-site, we'll have to note that. Yeah. So, any questions or?
I have one.
Oh, time, 6:30 p.m. Thank you.
Susan, does the city have any projects they might be applying for some grant funding for?
Yes. There will be projects in the Parks and Recreation Department and possibly in Community Development.
Great. Thanks.
Okay.
Thanks. Come on down.
Robert Hayes, 281 South 9th Street. Earlier today, I just wanted to, when I stood up earlier, I forgot to mention one thing. As you guys know, I had concerns about the parking on my street, and I just wanted to congratulate the city and the police department. There was immediate improvement in my neighborhood, and I really appreciate the quick action on that. That was really good, immediate improvement in my neighborhood over those issues. The second thing is I didn't stand up earlier during the public commenting on the police department. That's a really tough decision. I feel sorry for you guys. I didn't want to say anything because I really didn't know a lot about it at the time. But as Mr. Eckbaum said, if there's only less than a $200 difference between the 15% and the 20%, it just gives you and see what those two positions really mean to the police department. I think you'll get a lot more public support than what you might realize. But tough decision. I'm glad you guys finally made it. And congratulations.
Thank you, Robert.
Finally.
Yeah.
Mr. Mayor, I'd like to point of order. On your agenda here, will you be breaking after the public communications end of this closed session before you go into the redevelopment district, or you go on to the redevelopment before you go to closed session?
See.
Which?
That one. Second one. We'll go to redevelopment, and then we'll go to closed session.
Because what I have something to say on the redevelopment, but I don't want to wait until after a closed session to discuss it there.
No, we generally don't. We generally move into our redevelopment agency,
which is what we're going to do. Unless there's more public comment.
I got something on the council communication.
Me too.
Oh, okay. That's fine. Okay. Did I miss that one?
Not yet.
I'm old John Weiss. I'm 1660 Brighton Avenue. Boy, I wish I could work for the city. I could make more working for the city, and I could have pension, Social Security, and that other job I got. I wanted to show you something about your excellent plan in the past and how you might want to improve that. I didn't have time to make one. But the poor trucker, you know, they're limited to where they can go in this town, but you have the main drag of Oak Park and Grand Avenue, and you can't even make a right turn into Grover from Oak Park. And he was belittling the people. And I told him when he passed me, I said, go down to 8th Street, turn left, stop that place on the right. Tell him about it. The street sweeper, where did it go to? Did we fire him because we need the money for salaries? We hadn't had one up there in 5 months. And You know,
John, there was one up that went up 16th the other day, this last week.
Well, he hadn't been by Brandon, writing in 5 months. I know the guy was going to call him, but I hadn't had a chance. Then 2 weeks ago, last Saturday, I was coming home about 4 o'clock or something like that, Saturday afternoon. And as I turned off Oak Park on Brighton, here goes this four-wheeler, ATV. Hat on backwards, and he wanted me to move. But I just stopped, and I told him, if you don't get that thing off the street, I'm going to call the police department like he told me to do. So I went home, and I called. I asked dispatch, a 14-year-old kid supposed to be out there on the street, ATV, two of them. Oh, no, they're not supposed to. I'll send somebody up. I never left the house. I never saw a police department come up. So what I'd like for you to do is have him to direct somebody to go up and tell the mother, take the keys to work with her. Take the keys or you're going to confiscate the ATV. They're not supposed to be on the street, the way I understand it. And then about this large salary percent that I asked you about, aren't we over the salary percent? Well, I think you got the cart in front of the horse on this salary percent, high salaries. They don't pan out. And people moving out of California, business, going someplace else, was on the TV the other night, you know. If they have a strike and it's not settled, you're not going to get a lot of revenue out of this little grocery store down here.
John, they're moving out of the whole. They're moving. Some of our oldest businesses are moving right out of the country. Levi Strauss was shutting down in 2 years. They can't make it here.
Well, I
know.
I
have some agreement there. That's why I said I'd like to really see that as an agenda item that we can kind of discuss things. Where is the street sweeper? Do we still have a contract with street sweeper? And they're still. Are we keeping tabs on them? Are they fulfilling their contract?
Yes, there is a legal issue that's going on with regard to illegal dumping and some other issues that. Is going on in the background, and I don't know if that's diverting attention, yes, we still have a contract, and as I recall, it's close to, I think it's 3-year agreement, and I think it's close to the end of the third year, so we may be going through a competitive process soon on that.
And I forgot to ask you, John, I know it's on the photograph, but is that truck high centered on the, or is it just can't make the corner?
It's
a picture.
It's not high centered.
It had to turn lane. The people wouldn't get it. He had to have it.
Oh.
He had to turn lane.
Okay.
To make it by the corner
okay.
And the palm trees. That's not an easy turn for a truck.
No, it's not, but I see them make it, too. I see guys that have done it before, you know, the first time down. You know, my suggestion was a long time ago that we have some sign 500 feet away from that, from the corner on Oak Park that notifies the truck drivers, and I don't know if it's there or not. I don't think it is, but, you know, why, you know, truckers need to make a wide turn here or something or turn different. Right.
Down.
Right, they almost do.
He was trying to do it on the left because of the traffic there.
Either that or we need to say no right-hand turn, you know, and they need to go down around the block and find a way to come back in or something. But
we could put the crosswalk about 40 feet in.
Right. I think there is an issue there.
Picture.
Thank you. Yes, Ron? Oh.
That's a scary picture.
I think it's a great photo.
Mm-hmm. And I have seen trucks make that curve.
I see them make it too.
Yeah.
They have to take both lanes, and if you're in that closest lane turning left, you probably need to back up too.
Well, okay, like I said, maybe we need to have some kind of sign that informs them that they need to do that. which is very difficult because if you get in the outside lane, you're
going to facilitated meeting on potential resource sharing with police departments. And it's just basically following the process that's in the document everyone received in their Friday report. So we'd invite Arroyo and Pismo to this meeting and get everyone, all the involved players in a room and make that determination. Do we take the next step or do we just stop at dispatch? Just so we know, and I'd like to get that going.
I'm interested if, you know, we can have a dialogue at least, huh? If we agendize it.
Anybody sure, else? I'm okay. Interested.
Okay.
I think I stayed.
I read that report, but I thought I talked about the first thing you do is go through your own city, your own departments and the employees and the affected people and decide within your own city if you want to make this move. And then you go to the other agency. Maybe I read it wrong, but I did read it all.
No, and it's true, but it sounds like we've already made that first step because they're already talking about sharing dispatch services. You know what I mean?
Okay. Fine. Agenda.
Okay.
I'm fair.
Well, I think that item, when it's agendized, at that time, police and fire can come forward and give us some direction whether they want to go that way or not or what they feel, too.
Sure.
Yes, Martin?
Thank you. Mayor, just so staff is clear on the direction, council would like us to agendize an internal discussion and perhaps some form of invitation to be extended to the other agencies.
That would probably be at the end of that. I would think that we would come up with some kind of consensus to move forward with other agencies. I think that's
right. And there obviously will be some fiscal impact because we're talking about bringing in facilitators like the report talked about, which are usually police, law enforcement folks.
But the first session would not be a joint meeting of the three city councils.
Right.
You know, and that facilitator portion of it makes a lot of sense because I think that's why the last discussions failed because we didn't have anybody that was impartial. Mm-hmm. It looked from both agencies that someone was going to gain something or lose something, and it was, you know, it was not as impartial, and that's where I think it broke down. Not that it wasn't going to be a good idea, it just was the way it was staged. It failed. Okay, anyway, anybody
thanks
else?
For that.
Dave?
That's up.
I knew that.
In our,
that's
in
why
our,
I called your name.
Yeah, thank you. In our last letter last Friday, you saw the issue on Oak Park where we're $400,000 short now. That damn flower delayed this thing and it's cost us $400,000.
Excuse me, it's Pismo Clarkia.
Yes. That's what I said. And I think we need to, we're going to start arguing that this is a regional project. Maybe we can help have the other entities help share in that $400,000 loan rather than have it taken away from us and through future local street funding. But it's a big issue, and I didn't see it on the agenda for SLOCOG on Wednesday, but... Mm-hmm. But we certainly need to be on top of that somehow.
Well, the county definitely needs to be a player in that because of the through traffic that's going to Oceano.
Well, and Rio Grande. I mean,
that's
the borders there,
Berry
too.
Farms, yeah.
So that's how we got this whole project because it was a regional improvement, not just growth.
But I'm just saying, maybe that
increase in LAFCO fees will pay for.
That's what I said to him. Maybe Cortland would be a better, or maybe Cortland on the north and Oak Park on the south from Grand. Maybe
anywhere we can get tax money.
Well, it would be interesting to see what Rio Grande would say, since it looks like they've done their portion of a park in front of, I think, Rite Aid.
Yeah,
they're up
300 feet. Actually, 500 feet. I guess they did one block or two blocks, but it'd be interesting, you know, to because you're right. We do share.
Yes. No.
It is a jurisdiction. I mean, it's a whatever. Okay. Anybody else?
Thank you.
No? John?
Okay, with respect to Steve, we have consensus on that, right?
Yes, we have consensus on that. Okay. We're going to adjourn this meeting.
Okay, I do have something. Sorry. Sorry, I was dozing.
You were asleep at the switch?
Yeah, I wanted to bring up that the redevelopment agency, obviously as part of that, we've 20% of the tax increment has been set aside for housing. The fund is apparently growing, as I understand it, yet we aren't out there pursuing any housing projects, and I'm wondering if there's any interest to give staff some direction to contact People Self Up Housing, Slow Housing Authority, and any other agency that is in the business of providing affordable housing, and maybe to discuss if there are, explore if there are opportunities to provide this type of housing, to identify any potential sites in this city, and if need be, develop an agreement, because we have these monies that are sitting aside and we are not doing anything. We need to take some action. So I'm just wondering if there's any interest to agendize this for a discussion, if we can give staff some direction.
I think it's a great idea.
That's my soapbox for tonight. Well, for the first one.
For this agenda?
That would be under the redevelopment agency. We're in the wrong meeting right now for that.
Well,
but
okay.
You're right.
I'll say it again if I have to.
Perfect. Because we're going to be talking about housing in there.
Okay, you're on a roll. Go.
Hey.
I thought you had another item.
No, I'm done.
Oh, okay. I thought there was. I thought you had more communication. Okay, at this point, we're going to adjourn this meeting. And I don't know if you guys need 10 minutes or if
yes.
You need 5 minutes. Okay, and then we'll reconvene as the improvement agency and at 10 o'clock.
I stopped because Deacon's helping me.
You had dinner tonight.
Ready? Okay, we'll call this Joint Council Improvement Agency meeting together to order, excuse me. Can we have a roll call, please?
Here.
Councilman Board Member Lima.
Here.
Councilman Board Member Scholes.
Here.
Mayor Pro Tem and Vice Chair Santos.
Here.
Mayor and Chair Arnson.
Here. Public communications at this time, anybody that would like to speak from the
funds to set up the first redevelopment district. We initially borrowed $350,000 to hire a consulting agency to handle the matter, and we set parameters of something like 42%, I believe it was, of the mass of the city property was going to be held aside for something like $80 million. And then, lo and behold, we had Lucia Marr School District step in and hit us with a lawsuit. Cost us about $750,000, which we borrowed again to fight that lawsuit, and we ended up losing it. Then along came about 1994, some of the laws were changed that people weren't allowed to freely sue redevelopment districts, but there were tighter guidelines on what you could put in the redevelopment district. So in 96, we tried to revive this district, and we rehired the same consultants, and it cost us another borrowed $250,000. So when all in all, we spent about $1.25 million out of sacred funds, our enterprise funds, and to the best of my knowledge, none of that money's been repaid. It's a debt owed in that. So that troubles me. It troubles me as a taxpayer because I pay X amount of rates, for instance, on my water deals, which is one of the funds they borrow from. Perhaps we're charging too much on our water rates if we have such a cash cow over there sitting around so we can loan money out to the other city projects in that. I don't think that would get the approval of the Public Utilities Commission there, which approves most of all your rates and that there, if they knew that the biggest part of our money over there is being used to support city projects. Back on the redevelopment portion of it there, in addition, over the years, it's become a cash cow for paying staff salaries around here. About $1 million has been paid to date out of our first district funding. Then in 2001, we went out and borrowed another $2 million, which we owe each year about $100,000 in interest. Well, the redevelopment district generates about $200,000 a year. So I'm looking at this year. If you're paying out $100,000 to salaries and another $100,000 to the interest you owe on your bond borrowing there, what's left? Where are we accumulating any money? One of the questions I like to ask, in fact, I have several questions there I like to ask you. In fact, I asked this in the past and never did get an answer on it. But that $2 million borrowed, where, how much of it still remains, and where has the expenses have gone? I imagine probably about $300,000 is that money that we're putting in on the mitigation project on the downtown deal, because we know the grants that you received on that thing did not cover the signal portion of the thing, of the project. Also, I would like to know is on the current redevelopment district this, that we're proposing there, the second redevelopment district, I know this gentleman says, well, it's a long-term process, but we all know it's actually a declining process over a period of years. We've seen nothing really come out of it. And at the end of the 15th year, I don't know if he explained this to you, you're going to lose 25% of your income from that deal. And at the end of the 25th year, you're going to lose another 25% of your income. So you need to show something up front there and accomplish it within 5 or 6 years. One of the major projects, for instance, on your first district there was your hotel. That was supposed to be about $2 million of this proposed recovery of $20 million in that development there. And to date, we haven't even got a hotel even going there. And yet it said, if you check back on your records there, it was supposed to be in place by the 10th year of the redevelopment district. And what are we in now, the 6th or 7th year of the district? Another thing I would like to know is, and this I've talked to the gentleman here, is and redevelopments to the city's benefit. Basically, the area, the biggest part of your area is not really blighted. It's just undeveloped property, which is currently being developed.
Chuck, we're going to – that is a discussion item, so if you want to –
So,
you know,
anyhow, I'd like to have you look in and ask some questions there about maybe agendize the fact is are we paying too much for our water rates if we have this kind of money laying around to loan out to the rest of the city? What are the fees going to cost us in the future there, and what are we going to realize on this second district?
Okay.
Thank you for your time.
Be happy to answer those questions. You'd like it now.
I wish you would.
Well, first of all, too, let me just say the history that Chuck brought forward with a proven agency isn't really totally correct as far as my memory either. So I don't know if we want to go into all that, but. You know, he discussed a $750,000 lawsuit that we lost, and that's not really true. But anyway, there's some other issues there. So I don't know if we want to agendize an item in an improvement agency and discuss some of these things and straighten them up, or if you just want to try and take two or three of those issues at this point.
Be happy to answer a couple of the first two points.
Okay, go.
First two questions. First was he mentioned the PUC. PUC has nothing to do with municipal enterprise functions. You are, in effect, the PUC. The council sets the rates for cost recovery for water and sewer in this city.
And by the way, it's been eight or nine years since we've had an increase in water rates.
Okay. With regard to the impact of lending resources from the water fund, which are one-time resources, to another fund of the city or to the agency, that has absolutely no impact on user fees because we have a coverage test in the water fund. And what a coverage test is says that we have to cover our operating costs with ongoing revenues plus our debt service costs plus a coverage factor of 25% of the debt service. And we are close to not doing that now, and that's the reason why there is a user fee study that's included in the budget to look at that. It has absolutely no impact whatsoever if all of that money were repaid by the agency to the water fund. It would make no difference. We still would have to deal with recovering ongoing costs with ongoing revenues. So those are the two main questions. I agree with Chuck with regard to the fact that it has been an expensive process for the city to get involved in redevelopment, that the initial process before many of us were here was expensive and was initially a failed attempt. The council came back and came up with a smaller agency area that was successful after AB 9 or 1290 was passed. Since then, we have spent some funds on the creation of this area. That kind of effort did not occur in the past, and that the council recognizes that and has given us direction, and staff is pursuing that aggressively.
Yes, Chuck.
Point of order on comment there by the city manager.
Point of order on the what the city manager said, and I'm surprised. I guess we agree on some things tonight. And however, at the last town hall meeting, you came out. If you remember back there, I made mention that one of the future employees that we're looking at, amongst all this, I know the mayor tonight was concerned about what citizens have been talking to him about, the continued salary increase around here. I made mention during that meeting there that you're looking for exactly what he mentioned there, a director of the redevelopment district there, not our community development district, but the director of the district. And people have been banding around some figure about $90,000 a year to hire somebody to come in and get the thing on straight. However, during the intermission, the city manager came out and talked to me out there, and he said, well, that's not true. And yet I go back and review the tapes from the last meeting. I heard the mayor, I heard a couple of the other councilmen say that you are looking for a director there. And I said at that time, if you remember there, that why are we looking for another person to do it if we have a capable person over there working in our development deal, and this has been a boondoggle from day one, why don't we also assign him that job of taking care of as a redevelopment director there? Because this thing has not been really a winner on our plate. Thank you.
If you'd like me to respond to that, the economic development coordinator position was added by the council because I think the council determined that the community development director, having to be responsible for building, planning, public works, public utilities, economic development, and redevelopment, was too many jobs for one person to have. And my understanding is that the council said, if we're going to be aggressive about economic development and redevelopment, that we need to have a person that is doing that job. And that's why the council created that position. The community development director is still left with having to deal with building and planning and public works and public utilities and assisting with economic development and redevelopment from the context of that community development perspective.
That's true, because Susan got up and made that statement very clear, just exactly what a community development person does. So thank you for answering those questions, Mr. Anderson.
Does that clarify it, Chuck, or does that clarify your question?
I clarified my question that the fact that you're going to be out looking for another large salaried employee for the city. So I hope you have your...
No, it's not for the city.
For the redevelopment deal, which is part of the city. And I hope you have your, what you proposed tonight, I think was a great idea, is agendizing the fact that we need to go over and start talking about positions, salaries, and everything else. I think that would be a very healthy step.
The fact that he has a piece of property within 500 feet of this project, and that is deemed a conflict of interest, and I will be passing the gavel to the Mayor Pro Tem.
Susan,
thank you. Thank you. Is this on? Does it sound very loud? Is it on? Okay. Last August, on the 4th of August, the Council and Improvement Agency reviewed the final design for West Grand Avenue, a traffic mitigation project, which incorporated some changes requested from the previous discussion on April 21st. At that time, the council and agency approved the project to go out to bid, and the bid package was distributed to several firms. However, the city did only receive one proposal on it from Lee Wilson Electric Company. For a little background, the engineer's cost estimate for the total project, including three different alternatives, totaled approximately $996,987. Got it. Just gonna lose my ability to speak now. Anyhow, and this cost estimate included the alternatives, such as the 10th Street traffic signal and lighting, the pedestrian level lighting fixtures, and the decorative benches and trash receptacles. The estimate also included contingency and construction management costs. The proposal we received was well under budget, came to $787,343, which includes all the three alternatives. So we're pretty excited about that. And it also includes construction management and contingencies. With this project, it could begin as soon, we estimate, as January 2004, with a target completion date of May 2004, if we immediately awarded the contract. There's a little bit of a time lag due to the need to order a lot of the hardware and materials required for this project. And then also, it will take probably 2 to 3 months for those materials, and given the timing of the holidays in December, it probably would be best to start in January anyhow. We provided a couple alternatives for the council to consider. The first one, of which staff recommends, is to award the contract for the West Grand Avenue Traffic Mitigation Project to Lee Wilson Electric Company to complete this project for an amount not to exceed $787,343. I'd like to make a kind of separate note. With some of the savings of this project, we can reallocate those funds perhaps towards other city projects. So there's certain funds involved in the grants that need to be spent for this project in particular, but some of them can be rolled over to other projects, such as perhaps North Oak Park. So we're working with COG staff to figure out exactly what we can spend it on in the city. I guess that concludes my staff report.
Okay. Is there any questions to staff?
No, this time.
No.
I'm going to open it up.
It wasn't warranted. I'm really glad to see it in there, and I'm excited to see the project move on.
Is there anyone else?
Ditto.
Okay. The signal at 10th, will it have a signal to turn? I mean, you know, like we do have over here.
Will that be a left turn?
Because I know it's always extra money.
You know, I think it does. I can't recall the design right offhand.
My recollection is that it includes
the... It necks down, so it does have the turn signals. Yes.
Yeah.
Great.
That's right.
It's late. Okay. Is there anybody else? Do we have... Yes.
Yeah, I'd like to make a motion that... the City Council Improvement Agency award the contract for the West Grand Avenue Traffic Mitigation Project to Lee Wilson Electric Company. And that's it.
Second.
Okay. Motion's been made. Could we have a roll call, please?
She's got a hold.
Councilman Boardmember Lieberman?
Yes.
Councilman Boardmember Scholes?
Yes.
Councilman Boardmember Ekholm?
Yes.
Mayor and Chair Santos?
Yes. Where is he?
Hey, Ron.
Can we go ahead and turn?
So what took so long?
Gee.
Oh, Steve.
Yeah.
Okay. Item number 3, settlement agreement with San Luis Obispo County regarding revisions to the proposed boundaries of the Grover Beach Industrial Enhancement Area. Who's it going to do? Stop real quick.
Honorable Mayor, Chair, and members of the City Council and Agency Board. Staff met as directed by yourselves with representatives of the county. We arrived at a mutually agreed upon alteration to the boundaries of the proposed Industrial Enhancement Improvement Agency area, which is basically that the area south of Highland, which is primarily agricultural, would be dropped from the proposed area, and that the area that the county was objecting to on the either side of Houston or Huston, depending on how you pronounce that, would remain in the proposed area. Further, the city and the county agreed that the additional information that we need to get from the Auditor Controller's office, the costs for that information would be split 50% with the city and 50% with the county, where in the past the city would have paid for that. And so the council slash board might have about the agreement and the process and starting it back up again, and further about the fiscal impact of the proposed new area or deletion of the area south of Highland. Be happy to answer any questions.
Is the white on this map the global crossing? Is that what that is? Okay. So what do they call themselves now?
Tycoons.
Any questions? No questions of staff? Okay. Should we open this to the public? Sounds pretty exciting. Everybody's ready to talk on this item from the public? Seeing nobody, bring it back.
What about our consultant? I thought he was going to tell us all of the new impacts.
No, he was going to answer questions. That's what I heard. Okay. Do you want to hear a staff report from him?
Yep.
Okay.
I have discussion.
Discussion? Go.
I just feel, and it's a little awkward to bring this up, but and David, I respect everything you do for us, with the exception of the article that was in the paper last week. I just feel, since it was a public piece of editorial that appeared in the newspaper, I felt that I needed to discuss it publicly in one of our meetings. I think you're fully intended to have your views on how we play out redevelopment and affordable housing, and I commend the creative ideas that you come to. But I feel when one of us goes to the newspaper and identifies ourselves as a council member, we owe it to the community to give full disclosure. And that article was a great, your letter that you sent us was a great tabletop exercise and one solution to provide affordable housing. But what the newspaper story wasn't given was the fact that staff had been given direction by this council to negotiate a settlement with the county to exclude that piece from the redevelopment agency. It's kind of a freelancing type of thing, and again, I know you're entitled to do it, but I just don't think you did any of us justice by having that appear in the newspaper, and I'm going to respectfully disagree with your viewpoint as it appeared. I think that when we do things like this, we do need to think about affordable housing, and I think that's where the housing element of the general plan comes to play and zoning comes to play. But for us to put something in the newspaper where we're speaking as an elected official when we haven't discussed anything with property owners and the council's taken direction or given staff direction that's different than your viewpoint, I think it really muddies the waters of the issue and the community that reads that. And I wish I hadn't seen it. But again, I just want to go on public record as saying I don't agree with that viewpoint. I wouldn't have followed that methodology.
Well, in defense there, that article started out with an explanation saying, this is a letter from me to my fellow council members. And so just from that, I think you would have to
negotiate with the county to...
And the point is,
come to a settlement.
Tonight is the killer right now. If you agree to accept the staff's agreement, this project and the $500,000 per year that it would return to the city redevelopment that could be used right back into the same project,
just money generated from this project itself, is not going to be available ever. And what this would do would be help fund this very low cost housing that nobody else has even remotely hinted they could do. $150,000, maybe $130,000 per unit. If you see any other affordable housing, they now call it moderate housing, and it's 120% of the median income. It's a $280,000 house. They think that's their affordable house.
Right. So let me. So, I guess my whole intent was to educate the people of the community about full disclosure. And if I could ask a question of someone from community development, are there other means to zone that property for affordable housing or density-driven housing through general plan or housing element updates?
Certainly, we could rezone it to R3 if you wanted to, and allow for, the state requires us to allow for density bonuses as well. So we could provide incentive tools for developing affordable housing. We could negotiate with people's self-help or other affordable housing developers to try to get those to come together. And in fact, a lot of these things are discussed in the housing element.
And my next question that I'm looking for an answer on is the 20% set aside for affordable housing in the existing redevelopment agency as well as the proposed redevelopment agency, that can be used anywhere in our community. It's not limited to our redevelopment agency, correct?
That's true with specific findings from the agency.
Thank you.
The difference that you guys aren't willing to accept or something is the dollar amount of the difference from vacant land to a completely developed project right there that would continue to roll over. $500,000 per year could easily be the property tax increment that would come back to the redevelopment agency from this one project, not any other redevelopment. If you could use that, and if you don't have it in the redevelopment, you don't have that. And without that, you can zone it R3, R4, I don't care what. You're not going to get anybody to come in and subsidize these programs. So you're not going to have any funding. So you're not going to build it. And so you have to look for some unique twist to generate income. This is it.
I understand.
And the fact is that it has a lot of physical attributes the size and the location and the surrounding areas that makes it very possible to do something like this. And it's even centrally located. Other cities could also buy in on this same project. There's a lot of ways that this could be explored to generate very low-cost housing and intermixed with low-cost housing. And so, as I said, if there's interest amongst the council to look at this project, they would be interested in doing it. If it's just one council person's idea, they don't want to talk about it. And so you can kill it real easy, and it sounds like you have. But then I don't I don't think I have to listen to everybody talking about how forward-looking they are and how interested they are in creating something like this. Because if you're not willing to look at it and talk about it, then you might as well just say so.
Right.
So with that, I'm
so sure. You're talking about that whole piece of property.
I'm talking about. I used in my letter was very. It was to generate some discussion. I all the numbers in there have a purpose. It's 25 or 30 acres. I used 15 acres. That allows other uses of additional things around it. It allows for the ability to buy parkland right in the middle of it. It allows for other housing, other zonings. It allows for, I used that number of houses, 450 houses is huge. We need 150. That gives us a lot of latitude to see if there's other communities around us that are interested in also providing very low-cost housing to participate. It also allows us to mix in other uses, higher-end uses, which might be in a 190 to 220. I think that's the next. I have the chart here somewhere. Here it is. Very low is a $124,000 three-bedroom house. You're not going to see anybody else propose that.
All right,
I don't care how you zone. If you want to go up to a lower income, the next step up is a $190,000 house. This is this project, as I've roughed it out, you can mix those together. This is the kind of housing that this city could say, we think we can do. Let's look at it. And California or county or whoever you want to talk to, nobody else is doing it. So why not say, tell me why this won't work. But tonight is the night that will kill it. Without the redevelopment cover that returns, I'm using 80% of the 1% property tax increase is the way I'm coming up with my numbers. But I think the 20% of it, 1% property tax, 20% of it, I think, is a flow through.
But how can you make those figures without even having it zoned? It's not zoned that way. How can you?
No matter what you're going to do, you can zone it. You're going to have to rezone it.
Well, that's true.
It's not going to be built two houses per acre ag right now. You're going to rezone it.
Well,
and if there is an agreement, you wouldn't move forward tonight. Certainly not. You'd be talking to property owners to see if they want to come on board. I would think that a property owner, if he was interested in developing that, would like to see higher density uses there, because that equates directly into dollars. It's worth more. So I think if they want to remain in ag, this won't work. If they're interested in we're looking for and all this.
Well,
so we need to just either stop saying we're serious or not. I'm through.
If you were going to build a project like that, David, I know John had talked about low-cost housing and stuff, and you'd mentioned parks and stuff. Would you have a park like La Serena?
I don't want to develop it.
I
used an example. And my example, if you bought, if you used a price of 300,000 raw land per acre and put in 450 homes, you could put a three-acre park in the middle of it, and it would cost each home $2,000 unit cost. Here's a three-acre park. You could make it open space. You could do anything you want. This has the ability to do something there that is significant and serves what we all say we're trying to do in the South County. And it could serve something larger than the city. But there are problems. There are ongoing costs. They need to be met somehow. And just to think that, well, we won't put in redevelopment, but we'll rezone it and let somebody else do it privately without any of the income stream that this would generate back into the project, it won't work. So.
Can I jump in here?
Go.
I've been quiet for a while. I must say the same day when I saw the article, I was a bit disappointed, and then I think I got angry, and then I realized that you have every right to do what you did. I think it doesn't take from the fact that you're only offering one solution, and there are a lot of flaws, I'd say. I mean, the county challenged to what was proposed before. That's what's before us this evening. Are we willing to compromise having a redevelopment area with the county sitting out there ready to challenge, and they've offered a compromise? The second is, did you talk to the owners about this? Because I'm sure they've got ideas for this land. Maybe there's a way we can do a win-win. I mean, we can do the same things you're talking about without having this in a redevelopment area. We can have mixed zoning. We can have different types of developments. We can have single-family homes and apartments or condos or duplexes. I mean, there's all kind of creative ideas that are coming forward in the building industry. We can offer inducements. City of San Luis Obispo has an area called the Margarita area in which they are requiring the developer to set aside a certain amount of land for the people self-up housing and the housing authority to come in and actually build on that site. And we're talking workforce housing and a portion of low-income housing. I think with the tax increment, if this isn't a redevelopment area, we're not going to realize the numbers that you've talked about, because, you know, the general fund won't realize any of this money for, what, 45 years? Then we've got costs, and you mentioned it yourself. How do we maintain this housing? We've got to provide police, fire, water, and all of the basic services. So how do we do that? And we know traditionally housing doesn't pay for itself. You know, so I applaud where you're trying to go with this, and I think we are saying this, and I don't think it is if we don't go this route. We don't have the right to discuss this, because we do. There are avenues out there, and people are getting more advanced in their design and the way they lay these sites out and providing this housing. We just need to lay the framework. I think we can take our some of that set-aside money and either deal with this land or deal with other places in this. That's kind of my take on where we are. I think the county has backed up and said, hey, if you will include the business park on Houston or Huston, however you pronounce that street, you know, I think it's a good direction to go. And we can still try and get this type of housing either in that area or anywhere else throughout the city.
The business park thing that they threw in there was just a something to throw out later. I think that was just an offer.
But well, I
supervisors,
understand that.
If you're talking about the objection of the county, the supervisors believe if there was unified support here and if it was truly a low-income project that benefit, they could find an overriding community benefit and vote to support the entire redevelopment area and not parcel out this part. And if the supervisors do it, then you don't have to worry about the staff objection. That's the whole key to the thing. So. But without widespread support here, they don't want to get involved in it. And so so I can see where it's going. And that's fine. But then, well, never mind.
Now, John had mentioned that we could bring this back. Is that possible, David?
No. Well, not with the redevelopment portion, which provides the funding, which is always the killer in this. There is no other way to do that without subsidizing this somewhere, and there's no other way to do it rather than capturing the income tax portion that will, in any other project, go out to all the other entities. If this is a way to help, to have them help share in providing this low-cost housing, whether it's a port or it's the schools or it's the county or whatever else is on your income tax, I mean your property tax rolls there. So.
Now, I'd like to put some sense in here, too. I think, as John has mentioned, I think that it's beyond us to determine what the property owner should do with his property. I think he has some rights or they have some rights, and I think there's some discussion should happen there. The other thing is, and you were in the discussion or in the meeting when the head of the housing authority in San Luis said that they're going away from large projects like this. They're trying to do low cost housing in smaller groups because it does create a project, and that's what you're trying to do. Is you're talking about creating a project. A low-cost income area over there that creates all the problems that come with low cost, and we don't have to really even discuss what they all are. They all lead to any project that you've seen. They have the same problems. You know, they have a group of low-income people that tend to have problems with police, et cetera, et cetera, and. So if you're talking about putting a major project together, I think that has a lot of problems that are associated with it. If all the communities are trying to find a place to park their poor people, then our reasons not to do it. The fact that you're saying that this would be a revolving fund, we can have revolving funds in both of our improvement agencies that do the same thing. Not necessarily on one piece of property like that, but the money goes back into a three-home project in North Grover and a 10-home project in South Grover and et cetera, et cetera. You can still have those low-cost houses that are built by self-help housing or the housing authority or what other agencies are out there. they're just not going to be a big block in one.
They all have
property.
To be subsidized, and that's the reason they don't build more of them, is because they can't find the subsidy. But also, in inclusionary housing, all you do is you get a few units, possibly by strong arming a developer who raises the other prices, the houses of the other. So,
we have money in the funds. We just need to find a site. I'm not saying take this whole site.
Well, the set aside.
Or several sites. That's right. Yeah. I mean, people suffer. Housing Authority said that they need 2 acres minimum, but they'd like, you know, a little more. But I mean, we're definitely open to doing things. But you know, you're pushing one idea in one point, and you went to the media, and now I'm sure you knew this is the way it was going, and that's probably why you did what you did, and you have every right to do that. But you know. This, my feeling is that we can do this in this community. We do have the set aside monies. We just need to find some sites, and we need to get the right folks into the mix that could make that happen.
Well, you're in planning, so I'm going to sit back and I'm going to watch you do it. And I'm going to root you on because I think it's a wonderful project.
Hey, I got
that we
like,
need to do it.
I got 3 skill saws, a bunch of hammers, and
blocks. That'll take care of it, yeah, because we need it. Thank you.
I think that we just seen an article in the paper where it said Roy Grandy was going to have units for $200,000, and I thought for seniors, they can't afford that.
They're 650 square feet also.
Okay, what
and they're
do,
calling
what
them,
do
that's their low-cost
housing.
Take
action. What do you want to do?
I want to authorize if we're through with discussion, I'd like to authorize the city manager, executive director to execute the settlement agreement on behalf of the city agency. When and if it is also approved by the County of San Luis.
I second that.
Motion and second. Roll call vote.
Unless there's discussion. No discussion, roll call, please.
Public. The board and the council may consider taking any comments from the public if there are any.
Didn't we do that?
Does the owner have any representatives?
I thought we took
no, we didn't.
No one came forward.
No one else
did. Okay.
I don't think it was
offered.
At this point,
if anyone would like to have any discussion on this item, please step forward.
Yeah. You're just here to listen.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Can we have a roll call vote, please?
Yes.
Councilman Board Member Schultz?
Yes.
Councilman Board Member
Eckbaum? No.
Mayor Pro Tem and Vice Chair Santos?
Yes.
Mayor and Chair Arneson?
Yes. Okay. This time we will adjourn the Grover Beach City Council Improvement Agency meeting. We will move into a closed session.